end. So what we need to ask ourselves is this. Who needed the strait in the end open more, Iran or the rest of the world? Did Donald Trump just stop a war, or did Iran just win one? That is the question that is going to haunt international politics for the next few weeks and possibly for years to come.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Donald Trump says today is a big day for peace after the United States and Iran agreed on a two-week ceasefire. The US president announced the truce just 90 minutes before his deadline last night to bomb Iranian power plants and bridges. As part of the deal, commercial ships will be able to pass through the Strait of Hormuz under Iranian supervision. Geopolitical adviser Rina Shah has told LBC the truce will be seen as a tactical pause from both sides.
Trump gets to say his maximum pressure approach forced Iran to the table. He gets to say that. Tehran gets time to push its then 10-point demands on sanctions relief and these security guarantees that they've been demanding without fresh strikes. So it's a moment where both sides are sort of claiming victory.
Keir Starmer has welcomed the ceasefire, saying the UK will do all it can to support and sustain it. The Prime Minister is travelling to the Gulf today for talks on ensuring that the Strait of Hormuz remains open permanently. The visit was planned before the truce was announced. But speaking to LBC this morning, the former Conservative Foreign Secretary James Cleverly accused the Prime Minister of being slow to act.
Day late and a dollar short. So after a ceasefire has been announced, after we've had weeks of criticism, and I've received this from my friends and contacts in the Gulf about, yeah, they feel that we weren't defending our own interests in their country. Keir Starmer has played this badly from the start.
Oil prices have fallen sharply and stock markets in Asia have risen in response to the ceasefire. The price of Brent crude has dropped around 13% and is currently trading at around $92 a barrel. In other news this morning, Bill Gates is to give evidence to the US Congressional Committee looking into the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The Microsoft co-founder is the latest high-profile figure to agree to testify. Gates hasn't been accused of misconduct, and his recent inclusion in the Epstein files does not imply any criminal activity. The evidence session is expected to take place in June. An eight British American woman is due to be sentenced in Los Angeles later in connection with the death of Matthew Perry. Jasveen Sanger faces up to 65 years in prison after admitting supplying the drugs that killed the Friends actor. Perry died of an overdose in 2023. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 243 at 10,591. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain possible in the northwest. A very warm day for England and Wales, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Well, a very good morning to you. Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien all this week on LBC. The time is 10:03 and momentous events once again in the Middle East, ricocheting, cascading across the world. This time yesterday, we were only a few hours away from Donald Trump, the President of the United States, threatening to commit, in effect, genocide against the people of Iran, threatening to wipe out an entire civilization. He said he didn't want it to happen, but that it probably would happen, lest some revolutionarily and important event, his words, sick in brackets, take place to prevent it from happening. Well, by the time we got to yesterday evening, our time, that revolutionarily important event had taken place via the form of intermediation from the state of Pakistan. Now, we have a ceasefire. Yesterday, the threat of genocide. Today, a two-week ceasefire in which Iran has agreed to open the Strait of Hormuz and the guns and bombs and rockets and missiles and artillery have fallen silent across Iran. What are the details of that plan? There's a 10-point plan. The list of 10 points published by Iranian state media include a number of conditions that the US has rejected in the past. The Iranian demands are as follows: the lifting of all primary and secondary sanctions on Iran, continued Iranian control over the Strait of Hormuz, US military withdrawal entirely from the Middle East, an end to attacks on Iran and its allies, the release of frozen Iranian assets, a UN Security Council making any deal binding. For now, the plan allows Iran and Oman to charge a fee of up to $2 million a ship on vessels transiting through the strait. Bear in mind that those straits were free international waterways enduring the status quo ante before this war began on February the 28th. Negotiations began. Remember the context between the Trump administration and Iran over the status of Tehran's nuclear program almost a year ago. They had vastly different demands, and the limits to what each side would concede have proved a barrier to any lasting agreement from day one. And these terms that Iran has put down are harder and more stringent than those being discussed at the time. Israel, for its part, has said they'll abide by the ceasefire, but they won't do so in Lebanon, a secondary front of this war which has not received enough attention. What will happen next? Well, Pakistan's prime minister, who helped mediate the ceasefire, said in a post on X that he's invited the Iranian and US delegations to meet in Islamabad on Friday. Tehran has said it will participate in the talks. The White House has said it's considering in-person talks with Iran, but they have not been finalised. There is a very simple question that I'm going to put to you and I want your thoughts on. And we're probably going to end up devoting most of the show to it because the events are so momentous. It is a simple one. Who won this war? Who has won as of now? Of course, it could resume again. But given that there is a ceasefire now and both sides will have a strong interest in preventing the fighting from starting again, who won this war? Did Trump blink, and is Iran in a stronger position today than it was at the start? Were all those bombs and missiles and money and treasure and blood, was it all for nothing from America's point of view? Has Donald Trump committed the most serious mistake of his two terms in office, which could have repercussions for years, if not decades, to come? Who won? 0345-6060973, 0345-6060973. I'm going to give you my take on it, and then you can feel free, of course, as always, to agree or disagree with me. Let's just take it on its own terms, what this war was about. And when I say its own terms, what I mean is what Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu told us it was about. At the start of the war, it's a bit confusing. I mean, this fog of war, I mean, the fog was about, you know, 10 inches thick. But it was a bit confusing because Trump kept changing the goalposts. But at the very start, he said that this was about regime change. And he said that it would require Iranian complete surrender. To take those two metrics, Trump's own litmus test of success, both have not come about. America has failed in its military objectives. There has been no regime change. Yes, the Ayatollah is dead. Yes, he's been replaced by a younger version of himself, quite literally, his own son. Frankly, nature's scythe at the age of 86 was going to swing for the Ayatollah come what may in the next couple of years. Yes, Trump has got rid of him, but there's been no regime change. The Iranian regime is a many-headed hydra and it has survived. It has achieved its principal objective of survival. It concluded correctly that all it needed to do was survive, and its threshold, its barrier, its capacity to absorb pain was greater than the United States, Donald Trump's, and the West. And they were right about that. There was no surrender. There has been no uprising yet. Perhaps it will come, but there has been no popular uprising to topple the regime. Arguably, it's stronger than ever. Let's consider where we were before the war began, the status quo ante. Iran was at its weakest point in the region and globally for years. Its proxies, largely thanks, it has to be said, to Israeli and American action, had been in feeble, whether it was Hezbollah or whether it was Hamas or whoever it happened to be. Iran was weak. That is why they were at the table. Its proxies have been degraded. Its nuclear program, again, thanks to American and Israeli action, had been slowed. There can be no doubt about that. Not obliterated, as Trump and Netanyahu claimed, but it had been slowed and they were nowhere near a nuclear weapon. They wanted a deal. They were at the table. By all accounts, those talks were going well. And the straits, crucially, were open to international shipping. You could argue that the US and Israel, for now, and it was a fluid situation, had Iran more or less exactly where they wanted them. Let us think about what the status quo is now, the situation today. The US president has been showed to be more mad than ever he seemed, even less reliable. He's been seen to threaten genocide and war crimes. Whatever was left of America's reputation as a shining city on a hill has disappeared, possibly permanently. I don't think this generation is going to forget. Its Gulf allies have been alienated. They're likely to look elsewhere for their own security needs in the future. They can no longer rely on America. America has not proven able to guarantee their security. Israel has opened up a new war, as I said, in Lebanon. That is going to prove to more instability or lead to more instability in the Middle East. Thousands and thousands of people being displaced, their homes being destroyed. The European-US relationship has been fractured, possibly beyond repair for the rest of the Trump presidency. That leads to permanent questions now, structural questions about NATO. President Putin is stronger than he's ever been before, or at least he has been for the last couple of years, because he's got lots of new oil money flowing into the coffers. America is weakened, its munitions depleted. As I say, yes, the Ayatollah is gone, but before the regime appeared, you could argue, on its last legs, now people are linking arms, young people linking arms in Iran, around power plants and the bridges, because the regime is telling them to do so. Guess what? As we've learned 1,000 times before, aerial bombardment from the sky, guess what it tells you? It vindicates what this regime has been saying all along, which is the West is out to destroy Iran. And crucially, it has shown the world that Iran doesn't actually need a uranium-based nuclear weapon, because it has an economic nuclear weapon gifted to it by geography, for which it barely has to lift a finger. The Straits of Hormuz, an economic bomb, a foot on the throat of the world. One, it has shown that it can press at any moment. Before the war, that strait was an internationally free shipping lane with some of the world's most important cargo and freight and oil and supplies flowing through it on a daily basis. Now Iran will charge tolls and possibly make tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars into the bargain. Add on to that the consequences of this war. The world economy has been destabilized, with effects possibly for months and years to come. Higher inflation rates, greater risk to international shipping in the future. That will all be reflected in the price that you pay for everything, whether it's fuel at the pump or food in the shops. Never mind Vietnam. This could be Trump's Katrina, I think. This is the moment when his authority looks to be permanently destabilized. Why? Not just because he's shown that his judgment is so wrong and has been proven to be so feckless. This is a guy, I mean, never mind three-dimensional chess, it's more like three-dimension chess. This is a guy who is constantly being shown to have backed himself into a corner he doesn't know how to get out of it. His authority deeply damaged and enfeebled. But it's more than that. Throughout this crisis, he's looked like a kind of Bourbon king, like a sort of latter-day Louis XIV, only with more bling. He hasn't cared. When he's been asked about the effects of the war on the average American voter or consumer, he says, well, it's a price willing to pay. Very easy to say, surrounded by the glistening gold of the now revamped Trump Tower-esque Oval Office. But he's been shown to be unusually tin-eared for a man with previously such strong political antenna. As a result, I think domestically, he is going to be enfeebled for a long time to come. But like any absolute monarch, and that is how he's shown himself to be, like any absolute monarch, he is going to be absolutely furious now. He is going to be looking for someone to blame, and where those chips fall, who knows? Could it be Israel, Netanyahu, Europe, the UK, the Gulf, his own staff, his own team, possibly all of them? Everywhere, everything, all at once. But there is 3 years of this Trump presidency to go, and the world will ask, where next? Because he may be done at home domestically, and I think he'll, you know, the midterms are a loss for him now. But he's got a long way to go. He's going to be president until 2029. Donald Trump is, I think, this, to put it at its simplest, I think that Donald Trump has shown himself in this. He is less an emperor of Rome, and he is more a wizard of Oz. A wizard who has been shown the world and shown himself the limits of American power. As mighty as America is, as rich as America is not, as this war shows, in a unipolar world anymore. It cannot open the straits by force. It's tried, it can't do it. The world's most mighty military has been taken down, or at least has been stopped in its tracks, by an Iranian regime which, by comparison, is playing with bows and arrows. It's got some missiles, it's got some drones, and it's humbled to some extent. Humbled to some extent, American power. America, it has been shown, Donald Trump has been shown, it cannot, and he cannot, achieve its will down the barrel of a gun. America is connected to the world, it's interwoven with the world, and Trump cannot divorce himself from that. This is not the end of the story. Much might yet happen. The war might resume. History is going to resume and it's going to continue, and this is just a staging post on it, and who knows how things might look in 6 months' time or 12 months' time or even 6 weeks' time. But as I'm sitting here right now, the way I see it, and you tell me if I'm wrong, 0345 6060973. Today, maybe it's not a total humbling of American power, but it is a realization and a wake-up call, perhaps for Donald Trump, perhaps for the United States, perhaps for the whole world, of how far that power really extends. Who won this war? Iran, the United States, Donald Trump, or the Iranian regime? 0345 6060973. Lots of conversations to come on the show on this very important day this morning. Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien here on LBC. The time is 10:16.
LBC.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
Ready for a new kitchen? Wix kitchen experts can support you with clever designs and a professional installation. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC with Lewis Goodall. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Time is 10:18. Few of your texts here. Pete says, morning, Lewis. If it ends now, then Iran has won, hands down, no question. Biden's deal was far more secure. But it won't end here because Donald Duck, see what he did there, will never accept his own stupidity in defeat. Where is the enriched uranium? The only way to defeat Iran is to find a way to arm its citizens. That's going to be tough without boots on the ground. Rob says, hi, Lewis. There's only one winner, and that is Mr. Putin. He comes out of this in a much better position along with the Iranians. I think that is absolutely indisputable, Rob. The US has wasted an enormous number of munitions. There's no doubt, by the way, I should say, Iran has been, it's not all roses for Iran. Far from it. I mean, they have been militarily massively degraded. There can be no question about that. Their infrastructure has been highly damaged. Iranian, you know, thousands of Iranians doubtless killed innocent Iranians as well. And they will have been rocked losing so much of the top of their political leadership. But as I say, crucially, they have survived and they've shown the world their power. I don't think there's any doubt they are more powerful today than they were 6 weeks ago. And that's the only metric that matters, isn't it? One more text here before we get to Jake in Blackpool. VM says, the world won. Trump is busy banging nails in his coffin as he claims total victory. We can all breathe for now, but Israel can't be trusted. And Trump's psychopathy could still see him do something stupid in Iran. Let's turn to Jake, who is in Blackpool. Jake, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Lewis. How are you?
Good. How is sunny Blackpool?
Oh, it's actually sunny right now.
Fantastic.
So, I know. Yeah. So, I'm a bit background. I'm a history teacher in Blackpool, and I don't think the framing of the question you're asking is particularly useful. And I don't think
That's a strong start.
No, it's fine.
Go on. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Basically, it's because when we talk about winning and losing, it kind of dumbs it down. However, to be fair,
my speciality.
It's not about who's won, it's about who's lost. And when we see about the Iranian primary school that was hit on the first day of the conflict, that has pretty much become out of the media cycle now.
Yeah.
That was a huge loss of life. When we talk about the economic impact, I mean, myself, I've been offered a job in Kuwait, of course, right next door to Iran, teaching. However, I'm having to withdraw my application for that because of I'm losing out on a contract to basically go and teach somewhere that's, you know, a bit different, you know, going on into different life experiences, all because of this war. Now, don't get me wrong, that is a lot smaller to the huge loss of life.
Yes.
And if we have a look at the price of fuel that's going up all the time, I'm living in an area in which contains 8 of the 10 most deprived wards in the UK.
Yep.
It is evident that with this, we are seeing less people wanting to go out. I've got a friend, and on Monday, we decided we wanted to go up to the lakes just for a walk. However, when we got there, realised that even the prices have gone up there, by and large, a lot of the things that have had to be brought in there, so stuff that you can't really get into the lakes normally, fuel being the largest aspect, has gone up exponentially. I don't think framing it as America's won or Iran's won is the correct argument.
Well, can I just push back on you? I mean, look, everything you've said is completely right, and of course, with all of these questions, you know, events of such global import inevitably affect everybody, so you can sort of slice it and dice it whichever way you like, which we'll do on the show a lot this morning. But I think that, you know, in any war, ultimately, in any geopolitical conflict, one state or a group of states is looking to secure advantage or achieve its aims over the other. So won and lost is sort of shorthand for, say, who's achieved their aims and who haven't. And I think, you know, the way I see it anyway, and I'm interested, obviously, to hear from anybody who disagrees with me, 0345 606 0973, that, you know, Iran right now has emerged stronger.
Well, yeah, I mean, but then again, framing that as they've won the conflict, I don't think is necessarily right. I mean, America never set out its aims. I mean, don't get me wrong, they could never realistically be said to have won the conflict if they hadn't set out their aims. But I think
he sort of did at the start, Jay. He did say on day one, which I think, you know, is a reasonable metric, because that was the, you know, that was before anything had become kind of diluted or adulterated.
Yeah.
He said that this was about regime change and the Iranians must unconditionally surrender. Now, self-evidently, those two things have not happened, and therefore you can say on those terms, at least, America lost.
In aspects, yes, but then again, how he's framing it to the American people, by and large, because of the way that Trump has got his kind of his sphere of influence, and also the way that the Republican Party and MAGA kind of idealise it, they're not going to see it that way. And I understand, you know, we're going away from what I was saying about the idea of it's important to necessarily say if there's been a winner or a loss. To me, I will relinquish. There is evidence that you can say one side has won or one side's lost. But to me, that isn't the important part. The important part is the average day person, especially here in England, where we've had no say in the matter, and our Prime Minister has said it is not our war. We are losing out because of it. So that, to me, is and also as well, the everyday people, like in Iran, like with the school that was hit on the first day, that is, like I say, completely and utterly been out of the media cycle by and large. in the larger media cycle now, that is the real loss. And to me, that's much more of an interesting kind of talking point necessarily than which regime, quote unquote, has won the conflict.
All right, Jake, grateful to you, Jake, and Blackpool there. Kuwait's loss is Blackpool's gain, I suppose, in terms of that lost contract. But I don't really, I mean, Jake, I mean, it's completely right to say that it is very easy to lose track of, to get lost in the kind of geopolitical sands of these things, because, of course, that is what history will take most note of and will be analysing, raking over for years and decades to come. Easy to lose sight of the everyday, quotidian kind of impact, both here, but more importantly, for those in the Middle East who've lost their lives, totally, absolutely right. But ultimately, wars have aims, and states act to try and achieve, use war to try and achieve those aims. You know, war is a form of politics, albeit a deeply brutal and horrible one. And I think it's legitimate, therefore, in no circumstances to ask whether those who prosecuted have used war, America and Israel, presumably for a reason, have managed to get what they need and wanted out of it. Trump right now is claiming total victory in all of his aims. That is self-evidently nonsense. That is his fantasy world. That is just a world that he's trying to make us all live in. And too often we live in the realities that Trump creates for us. And it's important journalistically, if nothing else, to make sure that on this, the most important of questions of life and death and war and peace, we are not in his weird slipstream. Let's talk to Reg, who's in Kensington. Reg, good morning.
Good morning. Very good to hear from you. I just want to put some balance into the equation
Please.
I think the propaganda machine portraying everything as it is working absolutely perfectly well. I think Donald Trump is an absolute, he's a businessman and he's absolutely brilliant at what he's doing now. He doesn't want to win the war in Iran. He wants it to carry on and on and on. It's not about regime change. This is about the control of the straits. He doesn't want control of the straits either. What he wants is for the straits to be a volatile region for a very, very, very long time. America is self-sufficient in oil. It doesn't need the oil. It has just taken over the oil fields in South America, and he's treating them very, very well. He wants that place to become so destabilized that the world becomes dependent on America for its future oil supplies. He's taken a leaf out of Putin's book with his fight with Ukraine. Putin doesn't want that war to end, because while that war goes on, he is building up a fantastic... Putin used to import drones from Iran when he started that war. He's now manufacturing some of the highest quality drones and selling them back to Iran. He doesn't want the war to end. And Trump does... It's not about the oil. It's about making America the most powerful oil country in the world, more powerful than the Middle East. That's all it's about.
Reg, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and obviously respect your view. I would say I wonder whether you're doing something that I think people often do with Trump, which is you are superimposing a logic and a reason and an order which frankly does not exist. We always think that he's playing this bigger strategic game. What evidence do we have for any of that?
Well, I think the fact that he has no intention of changing the regime.
Why did he set himself up the objective of doing so on day one?
Because it's all part of the plan. He had to do something. He couldn't just go and take over the Strait of Hormuz. He wants to turn that into the most volatile region in the area.
Right.
And he's done it. I mean,
I think your theory is based on a false predicate, because you say that America doesn't need the Strait of Hormuz, and you're right that it doesn't have much direct dependence now since the shale revolution. You know, America is largely self-sufficient in oil and gas, but its indirect dependence is extremely high. Oil is a global market, not a local one. Hormuz shuts, and as we've seen, global supply drops sharply, prices spike everywhere. The US pays more for fuel, transport, food, and aviation. Even if the oil isn't going to America directly, the price shock hits immediately. There's been a massive political revolt from American consumers and voters about the whole thing, which is one of the reasons Trump has backed down. In fact, he said that explicitly. He said, if it were up to me, I'll just go in and take the oil, but I'm getting too much bow back from back home.
It's all part of the plan.
Reg, honestly, I think my friend, with respect, I mean, how on earth do you conclude that? This is a man. This is a man who contradicts himself every 10 minutes. What would it take for him to do? What would it take for him to do? How much many mistakes would it have to take for you to believe that perhaps it isn't all part of the plan?
Well, I mean, his logic is that America. He's a businessman. He's a businessman before he's a president.
Well, he's been a politician now for over 10 years. So I think this thing about him being a businessman, his business these days is politics.
Well, absolutely, and the reason he's in politics is for the business. When he leaves presidency,
I think he's in the politics for the fame. I don't know if he's in it for the business.
Well, for the business as well. Well, anyway, that was my view on it. It's not about the war. This war, he's not going to claim defeat or anything. It's not about the war in Iran. It's about destabilizing the Strait of Hormuz so that 90% of all the countries that take oil from the Strait of Hormuz depend on it. It's 90% of their oil.
Why is it America's interest to destabilize a region where it has extensive military presence, on which has, you know, extensive investment via American corporations and companies in terms of the oil and gas supply, where many of its most central and important geostrategic allies are located, not least Israel? Why is it in America's interest to destabilize that strait and that region?
His simple philosophy is that he wants everyone to go to America and do their shopping in America and move away from depending on the Middle East. That's it. It's as simple as that.
Okay, Reg, in Kensington, it's a view, and of course, respect it. I'm not sure, frankly. I think that is exactly one of the problems that we have with Trump, is that too often, and I understand why we do this. I understand why it is tempting. It's not just tempting. It almost feels essential to believe this guy, this guy who increasingly seems addled and mad, as I say, like a kind of deranged Bourbon king. You're kind of like thinking there must be something else. There must be something behind it. There must be this three-dimensional chess. But as I say, he's more like the Wizard of Oz. There is less than meets the eye. We have got more than enough evidence now to show that he has been making this up as he went along. And we superimpose upon him an order and a rationality and a reason and a plan and a strategy where none exists. And we do that, frankly, because it makes us feel better. But we have to see the man and the world and the plan insofar as it exists for what it is. And the truth is, more often than not, Donald Trump, who is a brilliant politician, whether you like him or not, he is a dominant, almost Napoleonesque figure of our age, on whom so much of our history and the world so often seems to turn. He can be that at the same time as being what he is. Not a man with a plan, but a screaming bag of political urges. News headlines now at 10:32 with Dominic Ellis.
Keir Starmer's on his way to the Middle East after the US and Iran agreed on a 2-week ceasefire. Tehran will allow shipping to resume through the Strait of Hormuz as part of the deal. During Keir's trip today, he'll hold talks with Gulf leaders about the strait and also meet with RAF crews protecting Allied airspace. Tens of thousands of resident doctors have walked out for a second day of strike action. The British Medical Association says talks broke down after ministers moved the goalposts on training opportunities at the 11th hour. The government says the BMA walked away from a fair deal. And Greece has announced it'll ban social media for children under the age of 15. It joins a growing number of countries that have taken action to regulate online platforms for teenagers. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain for the northwest, a very warm day for England and Wales, a high of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
It's happened again. All you said was barrel leg. Now she's looking at you like Nadine isn't your real name. Look at you go, as you explain volume cocoon is a key shape for the season. 100% cotton, you say? No way, she says. And then, oh, a little extension of the trouser leg. Check out that pleat. Then you break the news.
They're from Primark. Only £16.
Be a good friend.
You can borrow them.
Hopefully she'll forget that. Shockingly chic for £16. That's so Primark. Available in-store and on click and collect.
From the big transformations to the small home improvements, you can feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
Leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Time is 10:35. Just out the corner of my eye, I can see the US Vice President, a newly svelte, perhaps zemmed up US Vice President, J.D. Vance, addressing a crowd in Budapest. He, of course, has been there. Just coincidentally enough, at the moment of Viktor Orban's re-election campaign, of course, Orban, sort of populist, hard-right figure in Europe, great ally of the Trump administration. Vance, of course, turning up, saying he's not there to support Viktor Orban, but that he does support everything that Viktor Orban does and would dearly like to see him re-elected. At the same time as lecturing the EU in Hungary for election interference. You can't make this stuff up, can you? Hypocrisy, thy name is Vance. Let's talk now, and by the way, I want your continued conversations and thoughts on everything that you're hearing on this question of who has won, at least in this stage of the conflict. Trump, Iran, someone else, 0345-6060-973. Let's talk now and get the thoughts of Arthur Snell, former diplomat and host of the Behind the Lines podcast. Arthur, thanks so much for joining us on the show this morning. Let's just start with that very simple question. Yes, let's accept the situation's fluid. Yes, the ceasefire could collapse and the war resume. But as of right now, the status quo versus the status quo ante, who won?
I think Iran has definitely acquired certain powers that it didn't have before. Most notably, it's effectively, as according to the New York Times at least, will be charging ships money to pass through the Straits of Hormuz. This is a strait that was, you know, open to international shipping before. Of course, Iran's suffered extraordinary losses, you know, including the death of its supreme leader. Tragically, I think more than 1,000 civilians are supposed to have died. But in strategic terms, Iran still has its highly enriched uranium and it is now controlling the Straits of Hormuz.
Just on that question of the Straits, some listeners, and I must admit, this has occurred to me as well this morning. Why wasn't Iran charging before, given that this is such a potential sort of moneymaker and essential, potentially, you know, a pivotal revenue stream for the country?
Well, I mean, it's an international shipping lane. I mean, the fact that Iran is charging now is you know, against the norms of maritime practice. The difference is, of course, that what they've done is they've shown their military power by attacking those Arab Gulf neighbours, notably the UAE and Qatar. And so nobody wants now to take Iran on and to try and clear the channel. We saw that basically even Trump wasn't willing to do it.
What are the chances, do you think, that... Oh, two questions, really. What are the chances this ceasefire holds for the full 2 weeks and possibly longer? And do you think that some sort of deal now is likely?
I think the chance of the ceasefire holding, I wouldn't be surprised if we see some Israeli attacks, because the Israelis have slightly accorded to themselves the right to be running a sort of parallel campaign that isn't quite coordinated with the US. I mean, clearly there will be coordination. But I doubt we'll see major attacks, and certainly not on the kind of infrastructure stuff that Trump was threatening. I mean, you know, on the second question, the chances of an actual deal emerging, I think the issue is Trump was desperate for this to finish. It was clear that he realized that his war was failing, that oil prices were going through the roof, that he is losing his political coalition in the US. And so I think he'll be willing to sign up to a deal, probably one that is much less, advantageous than the sort of thing that he was negotiating before this war began.
So the net result of this could be that the talks, which by all accounts were going reasonably well, or at least they hadn't run into the ground, let's put it that way, that were taking place before the war started, that actually America ends up accepting worse terms than it might have realised and got had those negotiations happened and the war not taken place?
Oh, I think that's almost inevitable, because before the war, America hadn't really... Well, certainly not Donald Trump. I'm sure there are experts in America who had, but Donald Trump had not taken on board the fact that Iran has all kinds of asymmetric power, and, you know, one of which is this power over the Straits, but also the power to strike at America's allies in the Gulf and effectively to upend the whole business model of those Gulf states that are crucial to America. Think of how much investment Trump is expecting to get from places like Saudi and the Emirates.
What's the question of the future disposition of the Gulf states seems to me to be a very interesting one. Obviously, the Gulf states will now potentially be looking at their place with their relationship with the United States and to some extent under an American security umbrella, and presumably wondering actually whether America can really guarantee their security. Do you think this will start perhaps the beginning of a drift of the Gulf states, the Gulf allies, away from the United States?
Yeah, I mean, that drift was already underway, but you're absolutely right. And so another winner of this war is China. If we think back a couple of years ago, it was China that brokered a kind of peace deal, or certainly a rapprochement between Saudi and Iran. Now, of course, that has broken down in more recent months. But China has been increasing its relationship with the Gulf states. China is predictable. China doesn't start mad wars when you're in the middle of a negotiation. So I think the Gulf states increasingly find the Americans, they might find them to be reasonable business partners, for good for making money. There's obviously all kinds of investments, and there are personal investments for members of the Trump family, particularly from the Emirates. But as a strategic partner, yes, the US is no longer reliable, just as Europeans are finding as well.
Well, just on that, on the question of US-European relations, obviously under tremendous strain during this period during this conflict. I suppose the sort of long-term danger now is that in Trump's mind, and Trump will presumably be pretty furious about all of this, he'll probably be looking for somebody to blame, but in his own mind, that kind of what's happened in this war sort of vindicates his sort of reflexive view, which is that NATO is an asymmetric arrangement, that it's a sort of deal he hates, which is a deal where he puts everything in and in his own mind gets very little out, and that he feels that actually this entire war has vindicated that view.
Yeah, I think sadly that's right. I think I was of the view when Trump came back in that NATO was in serious trouble then, and I think there's been a certain amount of delusion on the part of Western capitals, from London to Paris to Berlin, that we could keep Trump on board, you know, by showering him with praise and promising to increase defense budgets and all those other things. And I note that Mark Rutte, the Secretary General of NATO, is headed to DC, and people say that he is one of the small number of people that Trump will still sort of listen to. But I think fundamentally, it's not just Trump. We look at J.D. Vance, we look at Hegseth. Across the leadership of the MAGA movement, there is this feeling that NATO doesn't work for them. Now, we could unpick the argument. I think it's very clear that the U.S. has benefited not just in security terms, but economically through defense sales, all kinds of reasons. But if those people don't buy it, I don't really see how the Europeans can come back from that.
And in terms of Israel's position now, where does it leave Israel? Because on the one hand, this is the war that Benjamin Netanyahu has desired and coveted for decades. He's been warning about the threat of an Iranian nuclear bomb for decades. It is continuing, of course, and it's made clear this morning that the ceasefire does not include its own prosecution of a second front of the war in southern Lebanon against Hezbollah, which is resulting in the displacement, forced displacement of tens of thousands of people. Where does it leave Israeli security, which was certainly a fundamental aim and objective and component of the war?
Yeah, and particularly if you consider that the ones that really wanted regime change, as in the end of the Islamic Republic, not just the death of one Ayatollah, was the Israelis. And that has not been achieved. And quite clearly, that is extremely unlikely, I think, at the moment. So I think you could argue that the Israelis haven't got what they wanted at all, and they certainly haven't made themselves safer. You know, Iranian missiles are still hitting targets in Israel, and understandably, you know, Israeli citizens are worried and scared by this. So I think what this shows is that Netanyahu's desire over decades to have this war was always a rather kind of quixotic one, that he was never going to make Israel safer by starting a war with Iran. It's understandable, of course, that he's attacking proxies that he feels could threaten Israel. But again, has Israel got safer as a result? It's hard to argue that.
And I note now, it's being reported that several state news agencies in the Gulf are reporting a number of explosions on the two Iranian islands in the Persian Gulf, including at Siri Island this morning. A separate explosion reported at the Lavan oil refinery. The source of the explosion unknown. I suppose it's a reminder that this ceasefire, insofar as it is one, will potentially be a delicate one and potentially one that could end before the 2 weeks is over.
Yeah, I mean, it must be on a knife edge. And of course, one doesn't know whether, you know, for example, the those could be a third party such as the Israelis, not necessarily the Americans, or the Americans could feel that, you know, certain targets are still legitimate in the context of a ceasefire. I mean, I think we just have to watch this sort of hour by hour.
One thing that has really struck me throughout, I mean, there is something, isn't there, Arthur, about the kind of nature of sort of asymmetric warfare these days, which is that we've seen over the past few years, you know, we've seen it with Russia and Ukraine, we've seen it now in the Iran war, the extent to which smaller states, the nature of modern warfare, drones, missiles and so on, even when you've got these extraordinarily powerful militaries, that smaller states, I mean, Iran's obviously a substantially sized state, but it's a sized state, but nonetheless a sort of much, a military minnow by comparison to the United States, that actually, even against these great powers, modern warfare allows smaller, less powerful states to hold their own in conflicts.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think particularly, there's always been this sort of idea that if you don't want to put troops on the ground, and you can completely understand why you wouldn't do that. Iran's a huge country, nearly 100 million people. You can't do regime change from the air. And actually, you probably can't do sort of behavioral change from the air when you've got a country that has had this revolutionary movement, which, yes, it's unpopular. Yes, there's been a lot of protests, but there are plenty of Iranians who support the Islamic Republic. And the IRGC's tentacles are throughout the entire society. So this idea that, oh, we've killed the leadership, so it's all finished, it's been proven to be completely incorrect. And as you rightly note, the thing about the drones is very interesting, that the Iranians invented this drone. The Russians, you know, started using it. A very basic bit of kit, very easy for them to keep manufacturing. On its own, not very effective, but if you have swarms of them, eventually some will hit their targets.
And just finally, where does this war, do you think, what has it told us about the nature of British power insofar as it exists geopolitically now? I mean, I note Keir Starmer is off to the Gulf today. Not entirely clear what the objective of that is, but nonetheless, he's in the Gulf today. Obviously, there have been questions about the ability of Britain to project naval power. Obviously, it took us a long time to get the Dragon out there. I think the Dragon is now under repair itself now. What has it told us about Britain's place in the world in these great power conflicts?
Well, I think it's been a fairly cruel reminder of the decades of underinvestment in our own defences. And so where we've ended up is that we've got such a narrow capability that maybe, for example, we commit a lot of resources back to Europe because of the Ukraine conflict. We've got troops in Estonia, and then something blows up in the Middle East, and we end up looking like we've got our trousers down. I think Britain is desperate to be involved and desperate to be a player, and I was similarly a bit confused by what Keir Starmer thinks he's going to achieve by showing up in the Gulf. Presumably it's to reassure allies there that we've still got their backs. And it's not, you know, we're not nothing. We still have a presence in the region. We're still trusted by a lot of those Arab countries. But we have stretched ourselves so thin, and frankly, I think it's a bit embarrassing.
Can we still claim that we can project power globally?
I think we have capabilities that are globally relevant, but we have allowed those capabilities to be incredibly limited, and we're sort of hopeful that not too many things happen at once, otherwise we simply can't respond.
And just very, very briefly, I note J.D. Vance, speaking to Budapest now, has just told the audience there that all of America's military objectives have been achieved in the Iran war. What would you say to that?
Well, I would ask him where the highly enriched uranium is.
Arthur Snell there, former diplomat and host of the Behind the Lines podcast, with a pithy summary of the latest way in which J.D. Vance is talking nonsense. The time is 10:48.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
If you wanted to get Kanye West back into sort of mainstream performance, wouldn't you do the I'm so sorry, I'm going to meet with the Jewish community, I'm going to educate myself, I'm going to try and undo some of the things I said and undo the damage that I've done first before then booking it, rather than, oh, well, we booked him, oh, yeah, can he meet with some Jewish community? He's really, really annoyed at himself for all the anti-Semitism stuff. Can he meet with them now? And then he can perform? No, no, no.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do
is... I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
weight loss.
Weight loss?
Forget that. You just have to
keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
I swear by
it. Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain Orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Morrison to Lidl and saving £41 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/you save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award winning own brands, and your fresh value a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 26th of the 3rd, 26. Morrison also sell other products. See online for more details.
Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire? With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Lewis Goodall on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Time is 10:52. Well, a central component, a piece on the board of this war has been Israel and Israeli security. Not just speculation, but indeed effective confirmation from the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio at the beginning of this conflict, at the end of February, start of March, that basically Benjamin Netanyahu had been the one who had persuaded Donald Trump of the necessity of the war, and that the Iranians would rise up if only America had the strength and the will to act. No doubt if that's true, and we assume it is true, given Marco Rubio said it, Donald Trump, it would have appealed to him to finally be the president who had toppled this half-century opponent of the United States. Well, given all of that, let's get the view from Israel itself. What's going on there? Noga Tonopolsky is a freelance journalist based in Jerusalem. Noga, thanks so much for joining us this morning, someone to whom we often turn for a bit of sense on all of these things. How has news of the ceasefire gone down in Israel?
Thus far, it's caused quite a bit of confusion, not the least because the government hasn't yet said a single thing to citizens here. Prime Minister Netanyahu put out a fairly terse statement just in English and just on social media a few hours ago, and that's it. It is a holiday here. It's the last day of the Passover week, but still, basically, Israelis are going on what they're hearing on the radio or what they're seeing online. So it's caused quite a bit of confusion. And for now, what I'm seeing is a lot of criticism of the prime minister unusually from his side of the map, basically people accusing him, ironically, of being a lackey to President Trump. And on the other side of the political map, his opponents, the Labour Party leader, for example, saying flat out Netanyahu lied to the people and has achieved none of the security goals he promised.
Why is he being accused of lying? What is he being accused of lying about?
Well, Netanyahu promised regime change, and Netanyahu promised Israelis they would be free forever of the threat of a nuclear Iran, that they would be free forever of the threat of ballistic missiles from Iran. Ballistic missiles were rained down on Israel all night long. And going further, Prime Minister Netanyahu promised Israelis that Hamas would not exist at the end of the Gaza war. He promised Israelis that Hezbollah would not be any kind of a threat to Israelis. And one after the other, these promises have not been fulfilled.
Of course, the Israeli government have made clear this morning that the ceasefire, insofar as it will hold and must hold, does not apply to a secondary front of this war that it itself is prosecuting, which is what is happening in southern Lebanon and its war against Hezbollah there. That is going to continue, we understand.
There's an enormous amount of confusion there. We did hear the Prime Minister of Pakistan say that this agreement, in part mediated by Pakistan, does include Lebanon, and that Israel and Hezbollah were committed to ceasing fire for at least 2 weeks. Then the Israeli Prime Minister said, not the case. We will continue to prosecute this war in Lebanon. And Israel has thus far, though I have to say, with lesser intensity today. Things seem to be a little bit in a wait-and-see mode. The Israeli army, interestingly, did put out a statement just about an hour ago saying that it had received instructions from the government, really laying that out, that to cease fire in the Iranian arena for 2 weeks, but that the ceasefire didn't apply to Lebanon. So the army does seem to have a concern about something that has happened numerous times in recent weeks, and it's that if something goes sideways here, that the army will be blamed by the government, and they're trying to watch out that that doesn't happen again. I do have to add, the United States, to my knowledge, has yet to weigh in on this Lebanon question, and I think it will be Donald Trump who decides whether Lebanon is in or out of this deal.
At the beginning of this war, my understanding was is that there was reasonable, quite substantial support for, at the very least, its aims in Israel and support for Benjamin Netanyahu. Insofar as that is true, do you think that Israelis will be largely disappointed by the outcome, assuming this is the end of the road with it?
Well, first let me go to your question, because those are two very different things. At the start of this war, Israelis did support the war, the vast majority of Israelis. But that didn't translate to support for Netanyahu, whose support in the polls hasn't budged anywhere even near a simple majority of Israelis in 3 years. And this war didn't change it. He does not have the support of the Israeli people. Support for the war, interestingly, in the period of 1 month, which is the latest polls I saw were 1 month into the war, so a little more than a week ago, support among Israeli Jews had gone down by almost 20 points in the span of a month. So yes, support remained substantial, but support had sharply gone down. And among Arab Israelis, support was low from the start and remains very low all along.
And of course, Israel has a general election due this year. Obviously, it's early days and we just can't know what's going to happen in terms of the ceasefire and so on. But as of now, how do you think all of this is going to affect Netanyahu's standing in that election?
Well, his standing, I think, will definitely not be enhanced, and he could lose quite a bit of support, including from his base. You know, there's a hard nut of supporters of Netanyahu who, to quote Donald Trump, would vote for him even if he shot at someone on Rothschild Avenue in Tel Aviv. But there are a wide range of Israelis who feel afraid of Iran, afraid of what happened with Hamas, afraid of the fact that Israel still has determined enemies on its borders, and they have voted for Netanyahu over decades as he has presented himself as Mr. Security and as somebody with unparalleled diplomatic abilities. I think for those voters, many questions will arise. And again, we see it from some of Netanyahu's, you know, more outspoken legislative allies. A guy called Tzvika Fogel, who's a member of the parliament here, who said Donald now looks like a duck on Twitter. Another Netanyahu supporter, former legislator of Netanyahu's party, a guy called Oren Chazan, who tweeted, Netanyahu started as a hero, now he's a zero. So it's interesting to observe that while in the United States and in some circles in Israel, there's a growing understanding that Netanyahu in some ways persuaded Trump to enter this war, the clear view in Israel is that Netanyahu is not even a junior partner. He was caught by surprise by the ceasefire announcement. He basically is a subject to it. He's not even a party to it. And Israelis are going to be grappling with that reality over the next few days.
Noga Tarnopolsky there, who's a journalist based in Jerusalem, marking our card for us there on how events have gone down in Jerusalem and Israel, which, as I say, has been a crucial piece on the board for this war. We're going to continue our coverage of this emerging ceasefire in Iran. And in particular, want to talk to you about whether or not Donald Trump is going to be the same president as he was before the war. He has bestrode the world during this term and American politics, his Trump restoration, like a colossus, apparently able to use and wield his power howsoever he's seen fit, within neither impediment nor bind at home or abroad. Does that change now? Is this his domestically, his Katrina? Abroad, his Vietnam? Is Donald Trump going to be the same president as he was before?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock. The Prime Minister is on his way to the Middle East after the United States and Iran agreed on a two-week ceasefire. Keir Starmer will hold talks with Gulf leaders about how they can support the truce. During the pause, negotiations to end the war will take place and ships will be able to pass through the Strait of Hormuz under Iranian supervision. Former diplomat Arthur Snell has told Lewis this morning Tehran appears to have negotiated favourable terms.
Iran has definitely acquired certain powers that it didn't have before. Most notably, it's effectively, as according to the New York Times at least, will be charging ships money to pass through the Straits of Hormuz. This is a strait that was, you know, open to international shipping before. Of course, Iran's suffered extraordinary losses, but in strategic terms, Iran still has its highly enriched uranium and it is now controlling the Straits of Hormuz.
Israel says the truce does not include Lebanon, where it says it's been targeting Hezbollah. But Pakistan, who helped broker the deal, says it does. Noga Tarnopolsky is a freelance journalist based in Jerusalem. She's told LBC the situation remains unclear and confusing.
The Israeli army, interestingly, did put out a statement saying that it had received instructions from the government, really laying that out, that to cease fire in the Iranian arena for 2 weeks, but that the ceasefire didn't apply to Lebanon. So the army does seem to have a concern about something that has happened numerous times in recent weeks, and it's that if something goes sideways here, that the army will be blamed.
Oil prices have fallen sharply after the announcement overnight of the ceasefire. A barrel of Brent crude, the benchmark for wholesale costs, has dropped to around $93. That's still above pre-war costs of around $72 a barrel. In other news this morning, public opposition to resident doctor strikes in England appears to be growing, according to a new survey. YouGov says around 55% of people don't support the industrial action. In April, just 33% were against it. The British Medical Association says action is necessary because doctors can't accept further real terms pay cuts. The government says its deal on the table is fair. And Greece has announced it'll ban social media for children under the age of 15. It joins a growing number of countries that have taken action to regulate online platforms for teenagers. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 265 points at 10,615. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest, but a very warm day for England and Wales, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC,
I'm Dominic Ellis.
British Gas have this thing. We call it home care. We'll fix all sorts, and it's unlimited repairs. Expert engineers will solve the upset of boilers not boiling or taps that won't wet. Electrics playing tricks or a pipe that's broke. We're there for everyone, even blue furry folk. Your home won't feel booby-trapped. It'll feel just like new. British Gas, taking care of things and looking after you. T's and C's apply. Excess options available per repair.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Time is 11.04. Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien all this week here on LBC. Iran war. It is the 40th day of the Iran war. And for now, at least, as we've been reporting, the guns have fallen silent. A reminder, in case you're just joining us, as to where we are. Trump has announced a temporary ceasefire, agreeing to pause attacks on Iran for 2 weeks after warning only yesterday that a whole civilization will die if Tehran did not agree to open the strait by 1 a.m. UK time this morning. They have done that, the Iranians. They've opened the strait, albeit they are now, unlike before the war, the status quo ante, the antebellum period, they are now charging for it, which they weren't doing before. Pakistan has offered to host peace talks. They should take place on Friday in Islamabad. Tehran has said it will, as I say, permit safe passage through the strait in coordination with Iran's armed forces. They themselves have submitted a 10-point plan to the US via Pakistan, but have insisted it doesn't mean that the war is over. Meanwhile, Israel has continuing to attack Lebanon, although, as we were hearing from Noga Tonopolsky there, a little bit of confusion as to exactly what the ceasefire might mean for the Lebanon front of this war. What we can certainly say is the economic impact is going to be substantial, although the price of oil has now fallen. J.D. Vance, as we've been saying, has been in Hungary, of all places, over the last few days, basically campaigning in a quite extraordinary way for the re-election of Viktor Orban, whilst at the same time attacking the European Union for election interference in Hungary. Work out that if you can. Here he is speaking at an event addressing the events in Iran and the ceasefire.
Just in the response that we've seen from various segments of Iran, you have on the one hand people within Iran who have responded very favorably. The foreign minister who said, look, we agreed to the United States' terms. We'll do a ceasefire. We'll do a negotiation. We'll open the Straits of Hormuz, and then we'll see if we can come to more agreement down the road. So some of the people have responded favorably and have said the right things. And then you have some people on social media within their system who are basically lying about what we've accomplished militarily. They're lying about the nature of the agreement. They're lying about the nature of the ceasefire. And so you have just even within their system, and this is why I say this is a fragile truce, you have people who clearly want to come to the negotiating table and work with us to find a good deal. And then you have people who are lying about even the fragile truce that we've already struck. And that's just an interesting thing about their system. And the final point that I'll say about this is the President of the United States has told me, and he's told the entire negotiating team, the Secretary of State, the Special Envoy, Steve Witkoff, he said, go and work in good faith to come to an agreement. That is what he has told us to do. If the Iranians are willing, in good faith, to work with us, I think we can make an agreement. If they're going to lie, if they're going to cheat, if they're going to try to prevent even the fragile truce that we've set up from taking place, then they're not going to be happy. Because what the president has also shown is that we still have clear military, diplomatic, and maybe most importantly, we have extraordinary economic leverage. So the president has told us not to use those tools. He's told us to come to the negotiating table. But if the Iranians don't do the exact same thing, they're going to find out that the president of the United States is not one to mess around. He's impatient. He's impatient to make progress. He has told us to negotiate in good faith. And I think if they negotiate in good faith, we will be able to find a deal. But that's a big if. And ultimately, it's up to the Iranians how they negotiate. I hope they make the right decision.
That is J.D. Vance, the U.S. vice president, speaking at an event in Hungary only minutes ago. Well, let's speak now to Jake Wallace-Simons, who's a columnist, broadcaster, writes for The Telegraph, foreign correspondent as well, has written a piece for The Telegraph online this morning saying Trump gambled on Iran and won. Jake, what exactly has he won?
Well, he won in terms of the tactics. The Strait of Hormuz now is much more open than it was yesterday. And that, of course, is the one strangle point that the Iranian regime has been using to its great advantage over the United States as a result of that catastrophic error that the Americans made of not planning to open the Strait of Hormuz before this campaign began. So I think that America is definitely in a better place now than it was yesterday. The Iranians have capitulated in their pledge never to negotiate and never to back down. They have backed down as a result of his extraordinary threat of civilizational death. And America is temporarily has regained a bit of ground that it had lost earlier in the war. So I think that this has inched America forward and its interests. But of course, everything is still up in the air and the war has yet to be won.
It might be in a better place than it was yesterday, but in terms of the Strait, it's not in a better place than it was before the war started, is it?
I wouldn't agree with that, because I think that if you go back to before the war started, yes, shipping was open, but the Iranians had all of their assets in place, as had been the case for many, many decades, in this exact eventuality.
Sure.
I know
sure, but just to say, Jake,
who've engaged in war games for decades, planning for opening the Straits of Hormuz if a war to happen, was because Iran always was going to do this. And so the fact that it has done it doesn't mean that the situation is any less dangerous than it was before the war. It just means that threat has been carried out.
It was a free international shipping waterway before the war. Now the Iranians are charging for access, and they're only allowing ships with the coordination of its own military. So by definition, they're in a worse place than they were before the war.
I think if you, a good parallel is if you think back to October the 6th, 2023. Yes, there was peace on the Gaza front. There was peace, on the Lebanon front. There was peace in the West Bank, all relatively, of course, and in Iran from Israel's point of view. But that was all an accident waiting to happen, because those forces had all built up over that period of peace strategically to a point where they could collapse upon Israel and attack it and present that existential threat. That's what we've been facing with Iran for the last 47 years. It's been building itself up in terms of its proxy militia, its hold on Hormuz, its terror assets embedded in Britain and elsewhere in the West, and its developing nuclear program towards a position where it can launch an apocalyptic war, which would be in line with its theology, to herald the arrival of its version of the Messiah, the Mahdi. And it's been bent on this plan for many, many decades. The fact that that America has taken this military action is simply pulling a tooth that needed to be pulled. And if not now, then in 5 years, it would have been even worse.
But Jake, you're right. America has seized the upper hand. The Iranian regime is on its knees. How can it be on its knees when it has shown the world that it has an economic foot over the West's throat, that it can cause chaos whensoever it likes? And let's be honest, it was Trump who was desperate to end this war. He knew that it had got out of control, that it had got out of hand, and that it was the Iranians, they knew all they had to do was to survive. The Strait of Hormuz is a weapon for them that they can deploy whenever they like. They've shown the entire world that they can do so.
No, I think that the Iranian regime is on its knees, as evidenced by the fact that it capitulated to Trump's remarkable threat.
If it's on its knees, then why wouldn't the Americans have continued the war to achieve what its aims were at the start of the war, which was regime change?
Yeah, I mean, if you let me finish, I think it is on its knees, certainly in terms of its military prowess. I mean, it's lost the Ayatollah, it's lost three or four layers of leadership underneath him. It's lost its navy, it's lost, you know, its missile defences, it's lost a huge amount of its ballistic stockpile. It's lost its nuclear program, apart from that enriched uranium, which remains unaccounted for. It's lost many, many thousands, nobody knows how many, of soldiers and fighters and senior officers. That is a huge loss for Iran. It will take many years to build that back, if indeed the regime does survive. But where it has been doing well, of course, as you rightly pointed out, is in this strategy to enforce a stranglehold over the Strait of Hormuz. And it's a huge glaring error in American strategic planning that it failed to prepare for that eventuality, which everybody has known for decades would be the Iranian move. The Iranians have been preparing for that for a long, long time. Now, where does this leave us now? It's a mixed picture. Militarily, Iran is on its knees. It was clearly unable to resist Trump's threats to hit its power plants and bridges. If it was stronger, it would have toughed that out and shown that it could survive even that and humiliated Trump. It had the chance chance to do that, and it didn't take it. That's as a result of American firepower and military overmatch. But yes, you're absolutely right. The war is not won. It's not clear that America is going to come out of this as the victors, because there's still some time left to go. But I think in terms of tactics, America is in a better place than it was yesterday, and the Iranians are bleeding heavily.
If the Iranian regime is on its knees, then why can't we compel them to hand over their uranium? Where is the uranium?
Well, the uranium, we don't know. I mean, it's probably buried under mountains of
rubble. So they're probably not on their knees then, are they?
Well, I mean, I think you're seeking to cast this as if the war has been finished, as if they're either on their knees or not on their knees.
Well,
Trump says,
to interrupt, Jake, but Trump himself has said, and J.D. Vance has said, that all of their military objectives have been complete and have been brought to fruition. So, by definition, the war is finished.
Well, look, I'm not going to sit here and defend Trump and J.D. Vance and their rhetoric or indeed their strategy for this war. But quite clearly, Iran has taken a monumental hit, as I've said, losing several layers of its leadership, losing the vast majority, the percentages are not clear at this point, but the vast majority of its military capabilities. You're right that Hormuz remains a problem. And I think that the outcome of this war eventually will rest upon whether Hormuz is open and free again or whether it remains under the Iranian jackboot. But like I say, you know, this war has not been concluded. We're talking about tactical advantages, one side and the other. And at the moment, I think that in showing that Iran did not have the guts to resist Trump's onslaught that he promised the other night with that remarkable threat to wipe out the Iranian civilization, it shows Iran's military weakness.
I mean, Jake, you sort of laughed and giggled at that. I mean, it's not a remarkable threat, is it? It's a heinous, appalling threat. If President Putin threatened to wipe out Ukrainian civilization, I would imagine that you would call it for what it was, which is an appalling, heinous act that no self-respecting, certainly democratic leader should ever utter.
It's a mistake to say I laughed and giggled. I sort of laughed in sort of disbelief, to be honest. It wasn't seeing any kind of any comedy in this.
Or virtue, but I think I would that hope.
What? I'm sorry?
Or virtue, I would hope.
Well, I think if you look at the post overall, I think that what people missed was the final line in that post, which was something on the lines of "Long live the good people of Iran." And as with Trump often does, again, I'm not speaking as a fan of Trump, but as he often does, he flirts with something that is horrendously genocidal, and then at the end, sort of gives himself plausible deniability, undercuts it by pulling the other way. So he said, "Yes, I'll wipe out Iranian civilization, but long live the people of Iran," suggesting that he's really targeting this atrocious threat at the regime and not at the people. And I think that we need to see that the post in its full context. So while I agree with you that it was totally unhelpful, it was an awful thing to say, we need to see it in the overall context. But certainly that doesn't make it any easier for any of NATO allies to support him after he said a thing like that.
But you do write that Trump has used the wiles of a street fighter to pull it out of the bag. What do you mean by the wiles of a street fighter? And what exactly is he pulled out of the bag, given that we're in a situation where Iran now is asking for more than it was asking for while the negotiations were going on and during the antebellum period, i.e. full enrichment rights, wants sanctions lifted, wants reparations? Like, in what world is that pulling out of the bag?
Well, I mean, in terms of the wiles of a street fighter, what I meant was using the outrage of of right-thinking people all across the world by provoking them with that extraordinary threat of civilizational death to the Iranian regime.
No, Jake, he didn't just provoke the libs, mate. He didn't just Jake, with respect, he didn't just provoke the libs. He basically would have terrified millions of Iranians, women and children, that they were about to get nuked.
He used the terror that was available to him with the platform that he has in order to intimidate the regime to cave and to accept a 2-week ceasefire and to open the Strait of Hormuz. And in that way, he has pulled it out the bag tactically and placed America in a stronger position now than it was yesterday. As I keep saying, the war is far from over. It was an egregious American error not to plan for defending and opening the Strait of Hormuz. But we are where we are. America has overwhelming firepower. The Iranian regime has been severely damaged and is beginning to bleed out. And we can only hope, I'm sure you'll agree, that this war will be won, the regime will fall, or at least be degraded to the point where it can offer a much less significant threat to the world than it has been doing for the last 47 years. And that good will triumph over evil.
Like you, I'm no fan of this regime, and I would hope that, dearly hope that it would fall. But the problem is, isn't it, Jake, that actually the opposite has been achieved, that likely what Trump has done and Israel has done is, just as its critics warned that they might, is help insulate this regime, has helped support it in place, has helped show that regime, show the world that it is powerful. It is more powerful now than it was at the beginning of the war. And there's a very different way. You've said that, you know, Trump's threat has forced the regime to cave. There's a different way of looking at it, isn't there? Which is, instead, Trump was desperate for the war to end because the consequences had escaped his control, and the Pakistani government gave him an off-ramp. That's what really happened last night.
I don't think so. I mean, it's interesting to see how many people are so enthusiastic about trying to paint this war as an Iranian win. There's evidence to suggest
not enthusiasm,
the opposite.
Just a fact.
No, it seems to be enthusiasm, because you have not recognized the fact that the Iranian regime has been all but obliterated. It's lost, as I keep saying, several layers of its leadership, including the Ayatollah. It's in a state of disarray. Yes,
in which case, why can it control
the Strait?
The Strait
of Hormuz remains open and has to be resolved. But this is not an Iranian win. This is not, Iran has been isolated from all of its regional neighbors. All of its Gulf neighbors have turned upon it. It's even been attacking Turkey. It is now isolated more so than it ever has been in its last 47 years of existence. There's every reason to believe that it will end up this war being far less dangerous than it was before. And I certainly have no qualms about saying that I hope that that is the outcome that we see.
Just yesterday you wrote, it's becoming increasingly difficult to see how the United States can secure a victory in Iran. This morning you wrote, Trump gambled on Iran and he won. What did you miss yesterday?
Well, yesterday I was talking about strategically. Certainly, it is looking more and more difficult to see how America can find a path to victory. But certainly this morning I was talking tactically. In terms of opening the Strait of Hormuz, Trump made a tactical gain there in buying himself those 2 weeks where the Strait is open, negotiations can begin to take place, and he can reposition the United States into a stronger foothold. So that it can begin to push towards victory. Look, I'm not saying the victory is likely for the United States. I'm saying that I hope for it, and I wish for it, because it's clear to me which side is the enemy here.
Jake Wallace, Simon's there, columnist, broadcaster, foreign correspondent. As you say, you can read his piece on The Telegraph online, Trump gambled on Iran, and he won. You can also read his one yesterday saying Trump has left himself no room to chicken out, and it's become increasingly difficult to see how the US can secure a victory in Iran. I think I would agree more with the Jake Wallace Simons of yesterday than today, but there we go. Good exchange. I want your views on everything that you're hearing. Who do you agree with? Do you agree with Jake that actually Trump has secured a tactical victory with this ceasefire, or with me that this is looking like a strategic defeat? And what impact has this Iran war had on America's position in the world? 0345 60 60 973, 0345 60 60 973. Time is 11:21.
This is LBC.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate. Got any tips?
Sometimes, pal, your best bet is not to bet at all. And BetVictor's app makes it really easy, simple and safe to do so. They've got lots of helpful features to help you manage your time and your spend online. But it also really helps that I can't find my blooming phone half the time.
Yeah, that does really help.
I don't even know where it is now. I can hear it, but I can't see it. Sandra?
Listen to Harry, and please, gamble responsibly. 18+, gambleaware.org.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensified Pasta Sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensified Pasta Sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
Ready for a new kitchen? Wix kitchen experts can support you with clever designs and a professional installation. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Lewis Goodall on LBC. Call 0345 60 60 973.
Time is just approaching 11:23. Should say that we're going to be speaking to the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. That is coming up at about 11:45. He's got some interesting London announcements on transport and so on. But also, obviously, we're going to be talking to him about his old sparring partner, Donald Trump, the Iran war, where all of this leaves our relationship, both with America and with the rest of the world. That is coming up around 11:45 with Sadiq Khan. First, though, some more of your thoughts on what impact the Iran war has had on America's position in the world. 0345 60 60 973. Chris is in Fife. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Lewis. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. What do you think about all of this? Where does this leave America's position in the world?
Well, how everyone else sees them. A box of bananas, nutcase, absolutely. They've managed to destroy all the old certainties. They've managed to try and destabilize and managed to destabilize everything. In Europe, we just think this year, it's incredible trying to keep up with all the stories, but they're destabilizing. They've won their spheres of influence, and I think everyone else knows that.
In terms of Trump now, where do you think it leaves him in his place in the United States, but also in wider world politics?
In the United States, I really couldn't tell. The fact that anybody doesn't think he should be in the loony bin is astonishing to me. But around the world, he is a joke, surely. I know your last guest said that he's had a tactical triumph, but really, I can't see how that holds. He's seen as unpredictable, he's seen as disruptive and agitator. And who knows who's pulling the strings?
What Jake Waller-Simons was saying that he's in a better position today than he was yesterday because he's got the straits reopened. And you can sort of, in its own terms, that's true. But of course, he only was in that position because he started the war, which was a war of choice. So
absolutely.
it's like saying, yes, he stopped digging the hole, but he dug the hole.
Yeah, that's why I was saying he's talking absolute tosh. Better position than yesterday. Well done. It's not as good as it was a few weeks ago. We'll all pay the price. I don't know. There's people behind him. Obviously, there's the fundamentalists from the far right of the Christian side who can make him do what they want. He's got Netanyahu who makes him do what he wants, and he's got his oil people. So he said earlier in this campaign, gas prices are going up. Oh yeah, the poor people. But we're going to make lots of money. There's these different strands, which are all quite extreme, that can push his buttons. And can any moderate push his buttons?
Well, quite. Chris is in Fife. Particularly interested to hear from you, by the way. I mean, I'm just thinking back to the start of the war and the period before the war, during those extraordinary protests that we were seeing, when the regime really did seem extremely fragile, at least from the outside. So many Iranians imploring Trump to, as Trump said, send help. And Trump said help was on the way. If you are Iranian, you've got family in Iran, particularly keen to hear from you about where you are now, and kind of what you think about where this leaves your family and indeed on some level your country. 0345 60 60 973. Paul is in Shaftesbury. I'm not sure where that is. Paul, where is Shaftesbury?
Where's Shaftesbury?
Yeah.
The centre of the universe. Top end of Dorset.
Ah, right. Well, there you go. I've learned something. As I always
I'm
do when I present on this station.
Do what?
I just said I've learned something, which I always do when I present on this station. Paul, what do you think about where this leaves the United States?
It means the United States weaker, because the Middle East countries who were relying on the United States have now lost a large proportion of their fuel generation, and they know that the United States can't protect them, which, of course, is why Starmer's out there. But what's large extent is this being missed is the historical context. I mean, you've only got to look. We knocked over. We, UK and US, knocked over an elected prime minister in Iran. We imposed a dictatorship for 20 years. They then had a revolution and put in clerics because it was the only sort of thing they could do. And now we're not happy with them. And to be perfectly honest, the clerics had signed the JCPOA, which was working and being monitored, and everybody knew that they weren't preparing uranium. So it's all very sad.
Well, of course, the JCPOA, of course, wasn't perfect, but what it was the framework for trying to make some progress. And, of course, inevitably, I mean, one of the ridiculous things about this entire enterprise is that the only way this war might have succeeded would be if the Americans and the Israelis had been willing to go all out and do everything that they possibly could to achieve regime change, which, of course, if they'd employed the full might of the American military, i.e. ground troops, whatever, they could probably have done. It would be very difficult, would be very expensive, would be very bloody, but they probably could have done. But the Iranians knew that they were never going to do that. And so short of regime change happening from the air, which is clearly what the Americans hope for, but it didn't happen, then as soon as you leave the regime in place, then where does it leave you? Well, basically, it leaves you back to the place of a negotiated settlement where all of this started in the first place with the JCPOA. We're basically back to square one.
Absolutely, and just the lesson is never learned by the Americans. They used overwhelming air power in Vietnam. That worked well for them, didn't it?
Well, quite. Quite. And they also used overwhelming ground forces, and that didn't work either.
Yeah, but, I mean, we bombed the living daylights out of the Nazis in 1943 and 1944.
Well, that did work.
It wasn't our bombing. Yes. Well, our bombing didn't get rid of them.
No.
You know, turned their cities to rubble, but the Nazis were still there fighting. So the only way you'll get rid of the clerics is by infiltration and raising a guerrilla army to fight them.
And Paul, in brief, we're going to be talking about this a bit more after 12, but just might as well get your thoughts on it now. Where does it leave us? Where does it leave the UK? British power, insofar as there is any.
Well, what Mr. Trump has done, hopefully, is push us into Europe's arms.
Europe's
he
arms.
He has to be part of Europe, i.e. EU. And NATO will now be NATO less America.
Paul in Shaftesbury, which I have learned is in Dorset, so they're very, very helpful. Just add that to the mental map. Paul in Shaftesbury there. I want to continue this conversation in particular for this remainder of the hour before we speak to Sadiq Khan at 11:45 about where this leaves America's place in the world. Sometimes there are conflicts and there are moments and there are wars. When we see power, the veil is kind of lifted before our eyes. And we see the sort of contours and dynamics of power as they really are. And you sometimes realise that maybe the imperium, the powerful, you know, country that sort of that had been thrown to stage is not as powerful as it seemed. You know, you could see that back with Afghanistan and the Soviet Union, Vietnam and the United States in the 70s, the Boer War in Britain in the early 20th century, and it goes further back and further back and further back still. It is possible. There are these events sometimes which just ricochet in the years and decades to come. And it could be that we are seeing that now with the United States, that the Gulf now hurtles away from the US because it knows that the US can't support them, that we see a permanent fracturing between the US and Europe. What does NATO matter now? What does NATO matter now? Who could possibly say at the end of this that we believe that if Putin sent troops into Tallinn or Riga or Helsinki or Vilnius or Warsaw tomorrow, that Donald Trump would be there for them and there for us? I don't think anyone can say, not just with any certainty, but with any probability that he would. Where does this leave the United States and their leadership in the world? And as I say, particularly interested to hear from you, if you are Iranian, you have family in Iran, what you think of where this leaves Iran now. 0345-6060973. Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien here on LBC News Headlines at 11:31 with Dominic Ellis.
Keir Starmer's on his way to the Middle East after the US and Iran agreed on a 2-week ceasefire. The Prime Minister will hold talks with Gulf leaders about how they can support the truce. During the pause, negotiations to end the war will take place and ships will be able to pass through the Strait of Hormuz under Iranian supervision. And Britain's biggest mortgage lender says house prices fell slightly last month. The Halifax says the average price dipped below $300,000. Analysts put it down to concerns about inflation prompted by the conflict in the Middle East. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest. A very warm day for England and Wales. A high of 26 degrees.
LBC.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do is...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
my
house.
My tip
weight
is...
loss? I
no, forget that.
Never,
you just
never, keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress.
MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Irrational is a printer that's next to your laptop, but somehow offline. Smart is a printer with self-healing Wi-Fi that helps keep you connected. Stressful is your printer choosing check-in day to check out of ink. Smart is an HP Smart Tank with 3 years of cartridge-free ink. Oh, that's smart. So go on, search HP Smart Tank. Find the last printer you'll ever need.
Stuck waiting again.
Tell me about it. I've spent all morning trying to get through to my GP.
Oh, I ditched that stress and joined Benenden Health. They've got 24/7 GP helpline. No waiting rooms, no sitting around.
Really? Sounds like a great service, unlike this one.
We're just about to get moving again.
Press play on your health with the 24/7 GP helpline and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Morrison to Lidl and saving £41 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/you save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh 5 a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 26 of the 3rd, 26. Morrison's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Ready for a new kitchen? Wix Kitchen Experts can support you with clever designs and a professional installation. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
This is LBC with Lewis Goodall. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Time is 11:34. A little bit of breaking news being reported by Reuters, the news agency. An oil refinery on Iran's Lavan Island has apparently been targeted in what the Iranians are calling an enemy attack on Wednesday, without causing casualties, the National Iranian Oil Refining and Distribution Company has said, and that is according to the oil ministry's news outlet. Good that they've got their own news outlet, isn't it? Shana. The company said the facility was hit at around 10 a.m. local, so that's 6:30 our time, adding that safety and firefighting teams were working to contain the blaze and secure the site. So a reminder, of course, that this ceasefire is potentially a pretty volatile one and an unstable one, and we probably should hold our breath a little bit and reserve judgment and get to at least the end of the day before we make any assumptions about it even coming into effect properly. As I say, there's still some confusion about what Israel's going to be doing in southern Lebanon overall. I just see that Donald Trump has put out on his Truth Social a sort of bizarre kind of AI-generated thing saying, We won, with a picture of himself looking bloodied but unbowed in front of an American flag. This is obviously going to be the Trump line. He's never admitted defeat about anything. He's never accepted that anything's gone wrong in his life. His whole life has been one glittering, glistening success after another. But of course, we who are more neutral about these things and are looking at the true state of the world can conclude that that is far from the case with regards to this Iran war. I want your thoughts on where does this leave both Donald Trump personally, his power at home, and also American power abroad? Is this the end of American power as we've known it? 0345 6060973. Remember that one basic metric of being a superpower is that you rule the waves. That was true of the British Empire in the 19th century. That is where we get the lyrics from. They're not just sort of neat, sort of rousing lyrics. They advert to and point to a wider truth. Britain was powerful, all-powerful, unipolar, because we controlled the waves. The same has gone for the United States since at least the Second World War. The US has not controlled the waves in the Strait of Hormuz. The Iranians have done so, which begs a question about whether it is a true superpower in the way that we've understood it. David is in Bayswater. David, what have you got to say about this?
Hi, Luce. Very quickly before I start, I just want to say great to have a presenter who's giving the audience more time to speak.
Gosh.
So basically, this ceasefire does not change any of the fundamentals, does it? It's just like a blip in a long road of instability, I think. I think if you look at the purpose of the ceasefire, was to bring some stability primarily to the oil markets and to try to improve the world economy. Yes, Brent crude has fallen by 20%, the price, but the markets know in the long run this is only a short-term fix, and the fundamentals has all come back into operation after 2 weeks, even as you said, if it does come into operation. So it's just like an interim kind of, it's a mirage, basically. And it's not going to do any good in the long run. It's not fixing the fundamentals. So you will see oil prices will continue. They're still way above what they were at the beginning. And prices everywhere in the world have gone up. Countries have declared states of emergency. You know, in Mauritania, apparently, they're stopping traffic driving at night and so on. So all over the world, the instability will still be there. It's just a complete farce.
Why do you describe it as a mirage, David?
Well, because it's a sticking plaster. It's just, and it's giving the regime in Iran, I'm no fan of them, but it's giving them time to start, you know, getting things in order and preparing defenses for what I'm sure they expect further attacks from Israel and America. And as you said, in Karg Island, something's been attacked already. So it's just so blindingly obvious. It's totally ridiculous, this ceasefire.
What do you think, what effect, if any, do you think this is going to have on Trump's own power, both sort of at home and abroad?
Well, it will soon dissipate, positive effect. Yeah, the markets have gone up, but it won't last. It'll all disappear and we'll be back to the first stage. Because as I said, the fundamentals haven't changed. The reasons for this war, the reasons the Iranians hate the West, it's all still there. It hasn't changed anything at all.
I think one thing you could say it has changed, of course, you could say that it's changed the dynamics of American power in the region at the very least, because, you know, before all of this, Iran was probably at its weakest that it had been for over 10 years. Its proxies had been degraded, actually through the use of American and Israeli military power. And the Gulf states had been slowly and, you know, basically placed themselves under the American security umbrella. We'd also seen the Abraham Accords as well, which was a big achievement of the Trump first term. But you've got to think to yourself that, you know, the dynamics of that region are going to change quite substantially now. A lot of those Gulf states might start looking towards China in terms of being a security guarantor, which would be a huge strategic win for the Chinese and a huge problem for the United States.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, though, the only thing, I totally agree with that. The only thing I'd say is that Iran has attacked a lot of the Arab states, although they might see that as a necessary thing Iran had to do in this case. But I think that could have caused it. You know, there was some rapprochement between Iran and some of the states going on. And they had been in contact with Oman and with Qatar and places like that. So, but in the long run, I think you're right. China is going to be a bigger player. But you just never know, do you, Lewis, in this world of politics?
No, you certainly don't.
Nothing's predictable.
No, and the Chinese regime itself may not be stable over the long term. I see that oil prices are plunging, as you say. Just one other thing, David, let me talk about this after 12 o'clock. But where does this leave Britain? What has this told us about British power?
Well, Britain is rank hypocrisy, isn't it, really? Because they've allowed the bases to be used and saying, oh, it's only for defensive. But that's sophistry, isn't it? To say, oh, it's just for defensive purposes. I mean, it's basically colluding in the war against Iran. And so and Britain's no longer world power, but I feel they should have had more cojones and stood up and done more. But I suppose
What would you have liked to have seen?
I suppose if in an ideal world, they would have said, no, this is totally wrong, this war, you shouldn't be doing it. But of course, that's just me being...
Well, to be fair, Starmer has said that, hasn't he? Starmer has said he thinks the war is wrong and it shouldn't have happened and is illegal.
Yes, but he hasn't condemned America for doing it. He could have gone to the UN and taken a resolution. The whole of the West is... they've criticised it a bit, but they're complicit by not being more critical. That's my feeling about it, really.
All right, David, in Bayswater there. And we're going to be speaking to Sadiq Khan in a couple of minutes. But after that, after 12 o'clock, we're going to be focusing on that question about Britain and about Keir Starmer in particular. Keir Starmer did something that was very, very unusual. And actually, in fairness to him, I can't quite imagine another recent British Prime Minister doing in being quite so explicit in his criticism of the war, saying from the beginning that he thought it was illegal, that it was wrong, that it shouldn't happen, that it wasn't our war. It's probably the biggest gulf and the biggest gap that we've seen between a British Prime Minister and an American President on such an important matter of American foreign policy. Certainly that I can think of, certainly since Wilson and LBJ and Vietnam and the, you know, LBJ and the American Secretary of State at that time begging the British Foreign Secretary and begging Harold Wilson to, it was Jim Callaghan at the time as the Foreign Secretary, begging them to send just a single battalion of the Scotch Guards over to Vietnam in a symbolic act. And they refuse to do so. And I think this is probably the biggest gaffe, certainly rhetorical gaffe, that we've seen since then. How has Keir Starmer and the British government performed in this crisis? Has it been enough to change your view of Keir Starmer and this crisis? It doesn't look, in terms of the polling, as if it's yielding him much benefit. And also, more substantially, where does it leave British power in the world? And our ability to project power. Has this been, although Keir Starmer, you might say, it's been his finest hour, has it been anything but our country's finest hour, in the sense that we have repeatedly been shown to now be a pretty strategic minnow in terms of our ability to project power around the world? 0345 60 60 973. We'll be turning to that after we talk to Sadiq Khan. A little bit of other breaking news here as well. Russia has welcomed the temporary ceasefire between the US and Iran. Who'd have thought it? Which the Kremlin has said it hoped would allow stalled peace talks. It'd know about that. On Ukraine to resume. Obviously, Russia desperate to resume those peace talks between themselves and Ukraine. Dmitry Peskov, Vladimir Putin's spokesperson, has said that the US's decision to refrain from attacking Iran's civilian infrastructure was very important. Peskov saying, against the backdrop of the pretty tough statements from various sides yesterday, which sparked a lot of emotions in the world, we were pleased to learn the news of the ceasefire and welcome the decision not to escalate the conflict further, especially... You can't make this stuff up. Especially by not striking Iran's civilian economic infrastructure. So there we have it. There we have it. We've got the Russian president's spokesperson in a position with some legitimacy to be able to lecture the American president on attacking or not attacking civilian infrastructure in the region. This coming from a government which has whacked and battered Ukrainian civilian infrastructure, energy infrastructure, for over 4 years, longer than the First World War went on for. And here we have a position, because of the rogue actions and rogue threats of an American president, where, let's be honest, he was threatening genocide, we have the Kremlin able to take the moral high ground. It beggars belief. Where does this leave US power? And where does it leave British power? 0345 60 60973. Do you think Keir Starmer, has this been his finest hour? Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien here on LBC. We'll be talking to Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, about all of this and much more. The time has just turned 11:45.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Keir Starmer will travel to the Gulf to meet with Gulf partners and discuss diplomatic efforts to support and uphold the ceasefire in order to bring about a lasting resolution to the conflict and protect the UK and global economy from further threats. Sir James Cleverly is a senior Conservative. He's a shadow housing secretary. It wasn't that long ago. Of course, he was foreign secretary. The Prime Minister going down to the Gulf. What does he need to do?
Keir Starmer has got no authority. He didn't prepare properly for defence of our nation.
He's in the Gulf today, Sir James.
Good. Day late and a dollar.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
my weight.
My weight loss?
Forget that.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Ready for a new kitchen? Wix kitchen experts can support you with clever designs and a professional installation. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
3, 2, 1, 0% APR and all electric Mini Cooper. What was that, Luton? Handling is extraordinary. Centre of gravity so low. And it could be ours with a 15% deposit and 3-year term.
Okay, Luton, reroute me to the nearest Mini retailer now.
Land a new all-electric Mini Cooper with 0% APR. Report to your Mini retailer today.
Mini UK is a credit broker. Ordered and delivered by 30th of June. PCP finance with Mini Financial Services. Subject to status. 18 plus. T's and C's apply. Mini.co.uk/Cooper.
Searching for a holiday? Here's an idea. Don't type cheap flights to wherever into your browser. You know you do it. Search Kayak instead. Let us do the finding for you. All the great flight deals from hundreds of travel sites, all in one place. Go on, do it, do it. Listen to the waves. They're calling your name. Not literally, obviously, unless your name is Kayak. Kayak! You're thinking about it, aren't you? Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Get your own UK-based account manager, a beekeeper, for support with PensionBee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with Lewis Goodall.
Time is 11:48. Suki says, Lewis, the only winners from the US-Israel-Iran conflict are China and Russia. I think I'd have to agree with that. Habib says, Keir Starmer, as someone said this morning to Nick Ferrari, has no authority. Always a day late and a dollar short. I think that's from James Cleverly, the shadow housing secretary. Have to say, not sure Kemi Badenoch has come out of this conflict particularly brilliantly either. I mean, after all, she and a lot of the right of British politics were jumping up and down, sort of braying for the UK and sort of mocking Starmer at the beginning for not being more involved. They've been a bit quieter since then. Peter Clark says, while I'm happy about the ceasefire, there is a downside. It can be seen to validate Trump's rhetoric. David said, Lewis, talk is cheap. Starmer's condemned it, but ultimately he's still helping Trump. In fact, it has done him no good. It's like he's trying to ride two horses at the same time. And Dave says, don't know who talks more, Lewis or James. Dave, I am but a Padawan learner by comparison to the great Jedi Master. Jane is in Stratford-upon-Avon. Jane, good morning.
Yes, hello, good morning. It's very nice to speak to you. I've been a bit as a fan of yours, actually. I like you. I think you're very good.
Oh, well, don't sound so surprised.
No. I do listen to LBC.
Well, that's a relief.
But not everybody I will listen to.
Oh, well, there
we go. I like Nick Abbott. I like Simon Marks. And I like Natasha Devon, and I like you.
Oh, well, there we go. Well, what an elite club that I am very glad to be a member of. Jane, what do you think about Trump? Do you think that this is going to change him or change his position in the world?
No, I'm going to tell you why, because I found this all very interesting at the weekend. I was at a party, and one of the guests was a retired professor of psychiatry. Not psychology or, you know, a proper psychiatrist. And we were discussing Trump, and he described him as a sadistic narcissist. Well, it's not a term I'd ever heard. Of course, I know what a sadist is, and I know what a narcissist is. And, of course, I knew that the world knows that Trump's a narcissist. So I didn't want to show my ignorance. So then I looked it up. And my goodness gracious me, I've got it in front of me now. The characteristics and behaviours. Pleasure in suffering. They enjoy inflicting others. They enjoy watching others suffer and feel gratified by inflicting pain and distress. Take it back to the White House where he's talking to the Zelensky. Humiliation and cruelty. They frequently shame, mock, or demean people in public. Again, Zelensky. Dominance and power. Their goal goes beyond control. They seek to subjugate and dominate others to boost their own self-importance. Lack of empathy and lack of remorse. Paranoia. Yeah, paranoia and payback. God, he is classically, this guy was dead right.
Well, he said the other day, Jane, I think that in a way, I mean, Trump often rarely tells the truth, at least not knowingly. But I think he let the cat out the bag the other day. And I think this is what people have to understand with Trump. He literally said he was at some reception or something in the White House. And he was sort of going around the room, as he often does, sort of doing a little sort of assessment of all of the people who were there and sort of, you know, how he feels about them at the time. And he's referring to someone, I'm not entirely sure who it was. But he was referring to someone and he basically said, I like that guy a lot. I like him a lot. And he was like, he's a terrible guy, awful guy, but I like him because he's nice to me and I'll be nice to anybody if they're nice to me. You know, and that was it, you know, and that is the kind of, that is the narcissist, right? That is a narcissism. He actually said, they could be the worst person in the whole world, but if they're nice to me, I like them. And that's it, right? That is narcissism. Basically, you could be the worst person in the world. That is exactly what he said. And I would like you anyway. That is textbook narcissism. And that's who we're dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I know what a narcissist is. I'm not as clever as this guy at the party. I'm not a psychiatrist, but it's this business sadistic narcissist. Have you ever heard that term before?
I haven't, but I suppose what I'm saying is that, you know, given all of us can sort of see that. All of us can see, and he explicitly says that basically, doesn't matter how bad you are, if I like you or not, as long as you're nice to me, I'll like you. And guess who else knows that? Vladimir Putin knows that. Kim Jong-un knows that. President Xi knows that. They know all they have to do is tickle this guy's tummy. And uniquely for an American president, he will respond positively to them because unlike every other American president, even the really bad ones or the ones we might not like, all of them have some value system, even if it's just the preservation of American power. And Trump doesn't have that because his only value system is himself.
Yes, that's entirely right. I don't think that he's going to make any difference in America. The Americans, they think he's great, don't they? I've listened to the wireless over the last 4 weeks, 5 weeks, they still get people defending this nonsense. You're quite right. The conversation you had with the speaker at the start of this hour, still trying to sort of make some sort of defence. The whole point is that the position before the 28th of February was better than it is now. And you cannot argue with that. But people keep arguing. And there are people that will still try to make out there's some good values in Trump. I myself don't see any. When he was going to be put himself forward for election in 2016, I was saying to my people, you know, well, even if I didn't like Hillary Clinton, I'd still vote for her.
Yes. Jane. Jane, he's coming short. Actually, I think it's going to be after 12 o'clock, but grateful to Jane. I see, Lewis, great Trump accent. Please continue with the Trump accent. Well, Jane, great caller, great person, great, very, very smart person. Marie is in Paisley. Marie.
Hi, Lewis. Thanks for having me on. Hi. I agree with your assessment of the US and how the balance is like really hanging in the air. I have to strongly disagree with what you said about Keir Starmer being the strongest, and perhaps that wasn't the word you used, but being the strongest and most outspoken Prime Minister against the US President. I really think Keir Starmer needs to grow a backbone. And even though he said, it's been empty words really up until now, he's virtually been in support of the US for years, like of Trump, for years. Although we're talking about Iran, let's not forget, it's not separated from the rest of what's going on in the Middle East. I mean, Keir Starmer has openly supported Israel, still calls it our critical ally. They're all implicated. I have to strongly disagree with your assessment of Starmer. I think he still needs to find his backbone.
Well, what do you think practically he should have done differently, Marie?
Well, he shouldn't be allowing anybody outside, like US aircraft, to refuel in our airports, for example. Not just our British military installations, but in airports like, well, just down the road from where I am, Keswick.
Can I give you the counter argument, and of course feel free to push back on it? I suppose the argument for Starmer is, I think it's sort of twofold. One is, I think that I totally hear what you're saying. What you can make an argument against Starmer, which is to say, look, rhetorically he might have been against the war, but in practice he supported and facilitated it because, you know, he's allowed Americans to use the bases. What's the difference between offensive acts and defensive action? I kind of get that. I do get that. But on the other hand, you can say a different thing, which is I do think it is indisputable that Starmer has been more vocal about this than about and in criticising a significant American foreign policy action than any prime minister since Wilson and Vietnam, and actually even including Wilson and Vietnam, because Wilson didn't publicly go out and criticise the Americans. He just wouldn't support them militarily. So he has been very explicit that he thinks it's a bad idea and he thinks that it's illegal. And I suppose with regards to the bases, what you can say is that if he denied them use of the bases outright, that would have put UK-US relations in such a deep freeze that it would have been against our national interests, because ultimately, whether we like it or not, we do rely on the Americans for so much of our security. So you can say, you could make an argument, and tell me why I'm wrong, of course, but you can make an argument to say Starmer basically pushed it as far as he realistically could go.
I have to disagree with that, Lewis. So first of all, the first thing about Starmer allowing US military aircraft, for example, to be refueled on UK soil, he didn't need to do that. And the argument about our special bond with the US, you know, that's out the window. And as you said yourself earlier on, you know, why should we be dependent on the US? I was against, I mean, I'm not going to start this about a Brexit thing, but this highlights how wrong it was of the UK to come out of Europe. I mean, it's a bit bizarre, really, that we've got Europe. France is like literally about 20 miles away from the UK coast. So it really is a bit bizarre that, you know, that we see, the UK sees the US as a special ally. I mean, I'm all for that changing. Yet there should be a new, I mean, I think we're in the process of a new world order, and I hope I'm still alive to see it.
But in reality, Marie, we are, I mean, we are really interwoven with the US. Our nuclear deterrent is dependent on the United States for replacement parts and components. We know that we sit with a NATO defence umbrella, if it still exists insofar as it does. We have such deep intelligence sharing. I mean, that is all in our national interest, isn't it? We want to preserve that.
Personally, I'm against nuclear. The fact that it's actually, we have a nuclear deterrent, in inverted commas, in Scotland, is quite scary. You know, also when all this was going on in the past few weeks with Iran, yeah, it's on our doorstep. Like, if anything happened, you know, it wouldn't affect Scotland. Obviously, it would affect the whole country. I'm for nuclear disarmament, as are many people, as are millions of people.
Right, Marie. Marie, I'm grateful to you. Sorry to cut you off there, but as you can hear from the music, we are about to go to the news, and we are going to be speaking to Sadiq Khan. He's just a little bit delayed. He's a busy man. Just after 12 o'clock, we'll be asking him, of course, about Iran, about his announcement on youth clubs, but also we're going to be asking the question that we finished with Marie there. Has this proven the Iran war, after nearly 2 years of a tumultuous premiership, has it proven to be Keir Starmer's finest hour? Has he shown the judgment that actually we need from a prime minister? And a criticism is misplaced. That's all coming up after 12 o'clock.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the Prime Minister is on his way to the Middle East after the United States and Iran agreed on a 2-week ceasefire. Sir Keir Starmer will hold talks with Gulf leaders later about how they can support the truce. During the pause, negotiations to end the war will take place and ships will be able to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. Speaking in Budapest this morning, the US Vice President J.D. Vance says America still has diplomatic and economic leverage.
The President has told us not to use those tools. He's told us to come to the negotiating table, but if the Iranians don't do the exact same thing, they're going to find out that the President of the United States is not one to mess around. He's impatient to make progress. He has told us to negotiate in good faith. And I think if they negotiate in good faith, we will be able to find a deal. But that's a big if. And ultimately, it's up to the Iranians how they negotiate. I hope they make the right decision.
European markets are responding positively to the news of the ceasefire. The FTSE 100 was up 2.5% in early trading after London markets opened. Oil prices also fell sharply overnight. A barrel of Brent crude, the benchmark for wholesale costs, dropped to around $93. But financial analyst Danny Hewson told LBC prices will remain above pre-war levels.
Significant falls, though, of course, remember back in December we were talking about $60 a barrel. I think anyone listening, the first thing they're going to be thinking is, right, okay, this is good. If the price of oil has come down, does that mean the price at the pump is going to come down? And I would suggest, of course, that because there's so much uncertainty, the answer is probably not for a while.
Investigations are continuing after a 21-year-old man died after being stabbed at Primrose Hill in North London. A second man was found close to the viewpoint with stab wounds yesterday. No arrests have been made. And Britain's biggest mortgage lender says house prices fell slightly last month. The Halifax says the average price dipped below £300,000. Analysts put it down to concerns about inflation prompted by the conflict in the Middle East. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 287 at 10,635. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather. Dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest, but a warm day for England and Wales. A high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Way up here, right at the edge of oxygen, in space. That's where you'll find us. O2 Satellite keeps you connected in more places than ever before. So even when you're far from everything, you won't have to miss a thing. Introducing O2 Satellite. O2. Essential for living.
30-day rolling add-on. £3 per month. Device type, app, location and other restrictions apply. See o2.co.uk/terms.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Time is 12.03. In this hour of the show, I want to talk to you about where this leaves the Iran war, Keir Starmer. Has it actually been his finest hour? And he's shown the judgment that so many Labour MPs and others have wanted him to display for the past 2 years. 0345 6060 973. We're about to talk to Sir Sadiq Khan about that and also an important announcement he's making about a new Youth Lates programme to bring youth clubs back into every community. First, though, let's just listen to what Sir James Cleverly, the Shadow Housing Secretary, had to say about the Prime Minister's role in the Iran war on Nick Ferrari this morning.
Keir Starmer has got no authority. At the start of this conflict, he was neither supportive of America nor was he critical of the president. He was caught between the two. He, throughout this, has demonstrated a leaden-footedness. He has moved slowly at the last possible minute. He didn't prepare properly for defence of our
nation.
He's
in the Gulf today, Sir James.
Good. Day late and a dollar short. So after a ceasefire has been announced, after we've had weeks of criticism, and I've received this from my friends and contacts in the Gulf about that, yeah, they feel that we weren't defending our own interests in their country. Keir Starmer has played this badly from the start, and this attempts to retrofit some kind of credibility by rushing off to the Gulf after a ceasefire has been announced is, as I say, far, far too little, far too late.
So that was Sir James Cleverly, the Shadow Housing Secretary, speaking to Nick Ferrari on LBC this morning. Let's talk now to Sir Sadiq Khan, Mayor of London. Of course, he's joining us from a community centre in South London. Mayor Khan, I know you've got a very important announcement on what you're calling the biggest investment ever in youth clubs by a mayor, and we're definitely going to talk about that. But just got to start with, obviously, news of the ceasefire, however fragile it is. What do you say to Sir James Cleverly, who say that the Prime Minister has no authority on this matter with regard to the Iran war, and that from the start that he's been, what was it, a day late and a dollar short?
Oh, good afternoon. I think it's really important for your listeners to just go back 5 weeks in relation to what was the position of the Conservative Party, what was the position of the Reform Party, and they've done the hokey-cokey. It's one leg in, one leg out. Firstly, they were in favour of unequivocally, unconditionally supporting President Trump in relation to a war in Iran, for which neither he or Prime Minister Netanyahu set out the basis for the war in Iran, what the criteria for success was, what the exit strategy was, and what Keir Starmer did correctly, in my view, is learn the right lessons from the Iraq war and ask the question, the legitimate question, why are you doing this? What's the legal basis? But also finding out what the plans were. Once it became clear that as a consequence of Israel and US's action, there was an impact on us and our allies, I think Prime Minister Keir Starmer was right to be pragmatic and dexterous and say, you know what? Because it's in our interest to protect our allies, but also ourselves in a defensive posture, we will support the USA to support us defensively, and that's got to be the right response to take. And it appears to me that neither the Conservatives or Reform have learnt the right lessons from the Iraq war, but also what's quite clear is this sort of, you know, one week they're in favour of unconditional support, one week they're asking questions of President Trump, is not the way to lead our country. And I've spoken over the last 4 or 5 weeks with ambassadors from the UAE, from Kuwait, from Bahrain, from other parts of the Middle East, and they are really, really grateful for the support this country is giving, but also recognise that actually what President Trump is doing, what Israel is doing, there is no plan, there is no strategy. And you just look at what President Trump said yesterday and the day before, clearly recognising that actually for many people, Persia, Iran, is the cradle of civilization. And I'm unclear why he seeks to, on a daily basis, gratuitously seek to cause offence to the followers of the religion of Islam. It's unnecessary.
I want to talk about that. But, I mean, just on that point, you say that the Gulf is grateful to us. What have they got to be grateful for? I mean, we sent one ship a week or so late. That ship is now, we're told, in a state of disrepair or has had to be taken in for repairs. We've sent some planes and some aerial support. But the truth is, Britain's been a bystander in this. And frankly, and this isn't just the Labour government's fault, it obviously goes back, but our armed forces are a shadow of what they were. And the Gulf can't rely on us. And this crisis has exposed that.
Well, what you've got to do as a partner of equals is to consult and liaise with your partners. What the USA has done, what Israel has done, is unconditionally, without consulting anywhere in the Middle East, embark on this war. What our government has done, by comparison, is talk to and liaise with the leaders of Saudi Arabia, the leaders of the UAE, the leaders of Kuwait, the leaders of Bahrain, to see what they would like us to do. And so they are grateful for us having that respect, but also responding accordingly. So, for example, yes, you make the point, it takes years to build submarines and ships, and the negligence of the governments between 2010 and 2024 has meant we've not got the assets we need. But our allies recognize that over the last 20 months, you know, John Healey, the Defense Secretary, and the Prime Minister are determined to invest in our national security, which is what investing in defense means.
Do you think that this war, and obviously depending on whether this resolution or this ceasefire holds, has it made us less safe here at home, and in particular in London? Iran has long been a sponsor, of course, of state-backed terrorism. Could this war have made us less safe on the streets of London?
I think when you speak to national security experts and counter-terror experts and the police, as I have to do as part of my job, they are concerned about rogue state actors. They've been concerned for some time about the impact of Russia, China and Iran. And the police themselves, a couple of weeks ago, expressed their concerns in relation to Hatzolah, the arson attack. It could have been an Iranian operation. It appears, and there's still a live case. Thankfully, it may not be. But we are concerned in terms of the risk to our capital city and our country. I'm not in any way excusing terrorism or criminality, but we know from the recent past that, you know, rogue state actors are operating in our country. We know there are individuals also who can be radicalized by what's happening online. I'm not in any way excusing it. I'm just explaining to your listeners some of the consequences of foreign policy done badly.
So just to be clear, you think that this war may have left us more prone to terrorism here at home?
I think the Iranian leadership has said this, and I condemn that unequivocally. I think the Iranian leadership has said, because we're supporting our allies in the Middle East, because we're using the assets that we do have, it makes us a target. I'm not in any way condoning that from the Iranian leadership, but they've said that.
When you saw President Trump, with whom, of course, you've had a long series of spats over the years, or he's attacked you over the years, and a bit vice versa, when you saw him threatening to wipe a civilization off the map, did you interpret that as a threat of genocide? And is this a man who makes those sort of threats? Is this with a man with whom we can actually do business?
Well, there's two separate things that he said in the last 48 hours which should cause us all concern. But the day before, I'm not sure why he needed to mock Islam by saying praise be to Allah after a grotesque form of words. I'm not sure why yesterday he had to mention, you know, destroying a civilization. And I make this point respectfully. We know that this guy says one thing and does another. But even though he doesn't carry through on what he says, what he does is brings into the mainstream views in the periphery. He normalizes unacceptable and offensive views. He gives succor and comfort to people on the margins who think this stuff but haven't got the confidence to articulate it. And that should worry us all because it makes us all unsafe. If we were talking about somebody talking about, you know, destroying a civilization or mocking, a religion like Islam, we'd normally be talking about members of the far right. We're talking about the leader of the free world, the President of the United States of America. So even though he may not carry through what he's talking about, what he'll do, without doubt, is give confidence to those to now say these things in the mainstream, whether it's on social media, whether it's in phone-ins, or whether it's elsewhere.
He has, as you say, mocked Islam, which is the religion of millions of our fellow citizens, yourself included. He's mocked our armed forces. The king is our commander-in-chief of the armed forces. Do you think that there's any utility in sending the king over there for a state visit? Should it go ahead?
Well, from my experience, His Majesty is the best diplomat the world's ever seen. I mean, if anybody can try and get through to the President of the USA, it's His Majesty, the King. But also, we've got to recognise, whether, we like it or not, it's a good thing, in my view, that the USA and the UK have a special relationship. That special relationship endures irrespective of who the officer is.
He's just, by your own admission, he's threatened basic genocide. He's threatened to wipe out whole civilization. Should we as a country be conferring upon him the status of sending our king, our commander-in-chief, after this guy has mocked our navy and our armed forces, sending the king over there as, with all the prestige that that confers upon him? Should we be doing that?
Well, look, I mean, President Trump and Donald Trump has a long history of saying one thing but doing another. He's been mocked, actually, for chickening out of some of the threats he's made over the last 2 years. So he may well have said this. Maybe it's because of the wise counsel of, His Majesty the King, Prime Minister Keir Starmer and others, that doesn't carry through in what he says. You know, we can't, ignore and avoid the President of the United States of America. And I think, Keir Starmer's also...
We don't have to honour him, though, do we? We don't have to honour him. We don't have to honour him.
Oh, listen, I'm on record as saying we shouldn't be honouring someone like Donald Trump by rolling out the red carpet on a state visit. I was against, President Trump having state visits to the UK. It's a bit different, His Majesty the King accepting the advice to go to the USA, but also recognising, the USA has a big impact on us in terms of our economy, in terms of foreign direct investment, in terms of our national security and other issues as well.
Let's talk about this new scheme that you are unveiling today. Youthlates, tell us about it. What is the purpose and idea behind it?
Well, I'm really pleased and proud to be bringing back youth clubs into every community in our great city. The biggest announcement, the biggest sum of money spent on youth clubs, £32 million. There'll be a youth club in every community. Why? Because I think a combination of both policing and prevention is important to enable young people to fulfill their potential, but also to reduce crime. So I'm the mayor that's more than doubled the investment in policing, £1.26 billion in neighbourhood bobbies on the beat, but also set up the country's first violence reduction unit, £35 million over the course of the next year. On top of that, I've announced today an additional £30 million plus. Why? Because I want young people to have somewhere safe to go, to receive the support from trusted youth workers, but also to have them fulfil their potential. I've seen from my own experience, growing up in South London, the difference youth club made to me and my brothers, something to not just play table tennis and pool and do boxing and cricket and football, but also a safe space for us to go. And I think youth clubs can be both life-changing and life-saving.
Do you think that a boost like this and the rolling out and greater provision for youth clubs, does it have the potential to prevent violence among younger people? I mean, obviously, we've just seen the appalling, fatal Primrose Hill stabbing. Is this a strategy to try? Do you think that such a strategy might actually bring such incidents or reduce such incidents in future?
Well, it's always heartbreaking when you hear about a homicide or somebody being at the receiving end of a violent crime. But the evidence shows that our strategy is working. Why? How can I say that? Because on objective metrics of crime measurement, homicides, it's not subjective. Last year, because we were tough on crime and tough on the causes using our public health approach, the fewest number of homicides on a per capita basis as records began in London, the fewest number of teenage homicides in three decades, the fewest number of young people under 25 killed this century. We first set up the violence reduction unit with our public health approach, invested in youth workers in 2019. Since then, 44% fewer young people go into an A&E with a stab injury. According to the ONS, independent ONS, you're less likely to be the victim of violence in London with injury than the rest of England and Wales, but it's still too high. And that's why on top of investing in the police, on top of this violence reduction unit, I'm bringing back youth clubs in every community in our great city.
We saw yesterday, and just one other matter, we saw obviously the Home Secretary decide to prohibit the visit of Kanye West for the festival in Finsbury Park, the music festival in Finsbury Park. That festival is now no longer going ahead. Do you support that decision?
Yes, so let me explain why. I'm somebody who's a powerful advocate of the right to freedom of expression, the right to free speech. That right is not an unequivocal right. It comes with responsibilities. And I say that particularly in the context of somebody who's got clearly anti-Semitic views, having a platform to have those views normalised, but also the context. Over the last few years, we've seen a massive increase in anti-Semitism people in London and across our country have faced. I've also seen the consequence of language giving people succor and confidence to behave in a certain way. And I've also spoken to and listened to the views of Londoners who are Jewish. They're scared. They're frightened. They're worried. There's been a heightened fear since October 2023. So I don't want this guy platformed. I don't want this guy coming to our city. It has an impact on community cohesion. It has an impact on public order. It has an impact on public safety.
Even though he said that he regrets those, even though he says he regrets those comments and has pointed to his bipolar disorder as partly a alleviating circumstance or mitigating circumstance for them.
I'm all in favour of supporting people with mental ill health. I'm all in favour of people being able to rehabilitate themselves. I think we need a much longer path of evidence of rehabilitation. We need a much longer path of demonstration that it was just mental ill health before we can give them a platform in front of 65,000 people for three nights in a row.
And just finally, Mayor Khan, there are all these rumours that you might be being sent to the House of Lords. Do you fancy being Lord Khan as well as Sir Sadiq?
You've been sent to Coventry. But listen, I'm enjoying being the mayor of London. The only job I'd consider stepping down from this one is if Arne Slot said to me, come and Sadiq, we need you against PSG tonight. Or to help us get a Champions League place over the next 5 weeks. That's the only job I'd consider. Other than that, I'm really happy being here in Lambeth, supporting our youth clubs, investing in young people, continuing to ensure that London is the greatest city in the world.
And you think Sadiq, Keir Starmer is safe in his job now for the rest of the year after the Iran war? Should be.
I think it's really important to recognise the huge responsibility that the Prime Minister has, not just in terms of addressing the cost of living crisis, investing in public services, ensuring we have growth in our economy, but also on the geopolitical stage as well, because of what's happening geopolitically on the global stage as well. I think, by the way, my experience tells me when there's a Labour government, the Labour does less well in midterm council elections. That's heartbreaking, because we've got some great Labour councillors and Labour councils. So over the next 3-4 weeks, I'll be working incredibly hard to persuade people across the country, particularly in London, sure, to lend their vote to Labour, so we can have more Labour councillors working with Labour mayor and the Labour government.
But you want Keir Starmer to stay in post, yes?
Absolutely.
So Sadiq Khan there, the Mayor of London, unveiling his new scheme to roll out youth clubs once again across the city, giving his support to Keir Starmer to remain in office and apparently for the King's state visit to go ahead. Want your thoughts on Keir Starmer's performance throughout this war? Has he done enough to afford himself the right to stay in place? Has he shown the judgment that we need from a Prime Minister? Or has it shown, actually, that Britain is merely a spectator in world affairs now? 0345 6060973. 0345 6060973. Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien all this week on LBC. The time is 12:20.
This is LBC. Looking for a new kitchen that you can't wait to come home to? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, from ultra-modern to timeless classics, and options for every budget, with kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. So book your free kitchen design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire? With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
Time is 12:22. The case for Keir Starmer with regards to the Iran war is this. I think the most positive case that you can put is as follows. Yes, he's getting criticised from the left to say that actually there is less to Starmer's opposition to the war than meets the eye. You can say that he still allowed America, you know, largely the access to the bases that it wants. Some of these bases are, you know, sort of to some extent American sovereign territory as well. So, you know, it's a bit legally complicated. But anyway, you can say that, you know, compared to other countries like Spain and so on, Starmer has actually been more pliant than he has appeared. But I think, you know, if I were making the case for Starmer, what I would say is this. You can say that he has absolutely been more resolute than most British prime ministers, I think, would have been, or certainly any recent one that I can think of. We know Blair would definitely have backed it. I think Cameron would have backed it. I think May would have backed it. I think Johnson would have backed it. I think Sunak would have backed it. Liz Truss wasn't around long enough to back anything apart from her own demise, so we'll leave her to one side. I think Starmer has been distinctive. I think this cuts to the centre of his politics. And you can sort of say he went as far as he probably could, because if he had said no basings under any circumstances, that might have probably imperiled the relationship permanently. And whether we like it or not, we are interwoven with the American security state. And that does mean being interwoven with Donald Trump's whims and requirements and his own mental spasms. But that is where we are. Why am I wrong? 0345 60 60 973. Of course, other leaders have had their reputations either tarnished or burnished as a result of this war as well. Kemi Badenoch, initially, you will remember, did seem to strike a more truculent, bellicose tone with regards to the war. This is James Cleverly this morning on Nick Ferrari's show defending Kemi Badenoch's response to the Iran war. Listen to this.
She was never advocating Britain get directly involved in this conflict. What she said was that blocking America from using their military equipment from based in British bases was not going to improve relations with the United States of America and have no credible impact on the war. That is exactly how it has played out. Keir Starmer has been the one that's changed his position, first not allowing, then criticising, now rushing off to the Gulf. He's flip-flopped, as he always does, U-turns all over the place. The point is that Keir Starmer's indecision has led us to the worst of all outcomes. Dragged into this conflict, criticised by our allies, and not just the United States of America, including countries in the Gulf. We've now got Cyprus putting a question mark over the maintenance of the base at Akrotiri because they feel that we failed to defend it properly. This is all down to Keir Starmer, and the sad truth is he is not up to the job.
That's Sir James Cleverly defending Kemi Badenoch's response to the war, Iran war, and saying that her position had not changed. Well, I do beg to differ, Sir James. If we look at her quotes, when the strikes began, Badenoch said that US-Israeli attacks on Iran were absolutely right, and it is a position my party supports. At PMQ, she pushed Starmer especially hard, saying, why is he asking our allies to do what we should be doing ourselves? Then, as oil prices surge and public opinion hardened, she told the BBC, I never said we should join the war. Well, maybe not absolutely explicitly, but the thrust of what she was saying was clear, as was, by the way, a lot of the right-wing commentariat at the time. I saw it throughout the newspapers, basically excoriating, blistering at Starmer for not being more involved and exposing British impotence. Well, why would we want to be more involved on all of this sort of stuff? Basically, she ended up saying, we are at war. The difference is we're not joining the war, we're in the war. I think there's a sort of head of a very fine pin that we might be dancing on there. And it's certainly true to say that although she always says she never misspeaks, she has shifted rhetorically without a shadow of a doubt. Steph is in Peterborough, who I think has something to say about Keir Starmer. Steph, good afternoon.
Yes, every time James cleverly opened his mouth. Basically, Lewis, what I'm saying is that I think there's 195 countries in the world, and only two agreed with attacking Iran, which is possibly an illegal war. They are potentially have committed war crimes. Netanyahu has an international arrest warrant against him. So Keir Starmer has planned a blinder, keeping out of it. Reference Cyprus, it was Lebanon and Hezbollah that sent drones over. The same time Iran started firing back, then the RAF in the Gulf were straight away protecting British citizens. I'm sorry, I'm quite nervous and I'm quite upset. So.
Absolutely nothing to be nervous about, Steph. Nothing to be nervous about at all.
Yeah, but the thing is, what annoys me, Lewis, is the fact that Keir has stood by international law. People complain about his stance on Gaza. But at the end of the day, Lewis, he's a world leader. He goes by international law. All the other countries didn't get involved, or Europe didn't get involved.
No.
Russia were fuming with Trump. China was fuming with Trump. Now, could you imagine, because I don't know if it was Farage or Badenoch, said about we need to get the gloves off and go in after them? I'm not sure which one said that. And the thing is, they seem to forget that what the Tories did to our armed forces. You cannot build military grade planes, ships, in 2 years, Lewis.
Well, I certainly agree with that.
It takes years.
The Tories' criticism, I think, Steph, would be to say that...
disgusting.
Well, it's certainly true to say, look, I mean, there's been a lot of criticism about the use of the Dragon and other frigates and so on. Well, it takes between 5 to 7 years to build a ship like that, and so... the navy we have now, it's a Tories navy. No doubt, yeah. You know, Labour couldn't possibly, even if it had wanted to, augment the navy in the ways that are being described. So that's
but
certainly
you do
true.
You do know that they've invested billions and they're building 12 warships.
The Tories' argument is to say is that they knew what was coming or should have known what was coming and deployed the ships accordingly earlier as the French and others did. That's the Tories' argument.
But do you know about what has happened to with Dragon? Because With Dragon, it's like having an MOT in the service, basically. And basically, when a ship goes out to certain parts of the world, it needs to have specifics on it. Now, going to the Gulf in that role, it needed specific things going on. Yes. It had to be loaded with, you know, ammunition and that. And I do believe that... because it should have took 6 weeks to recommission it should have took 6 weeks to recondition the ship, but it took 6 days, Lewis. So their hands was forced. Because the modern warfare is in the air. It's drones, it's missiles, you know.
It's also on the ground, as we're seeing in Ukraine, Steph, but yeah. I'm grateful to you, Steph and Peter Burrow there, putting up the case for Keir Starmer. I want to hear that from you as well, whether you think this has been Keir Starmer's finest hour or not as Prime Minister. 0345-6060973. I'm afraid to say, everybody, that Donald Trump is up and about, and he's decided to truth. And he said this, United States will work closely with Iran, so closely, which we have determined has gone through what will be a very productive regime change. There will be no enrichment of uranium, and the United States will, working with Iran, dig up and remove all of the deeply buried B-2 bombers' nuclear dust. I don't know what he's talking about. It is now and has been under very exacting satellite surveillance, brackets, Space Force. Nothing has been touched from the date of attack. We are and will be talking tariff and sanctions relief with Iran. Many of the 15 points have already been agreed to. You guessed it. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump. So there we go. The US confirming, saying that there will be no enrichment, but basically saying that it has already agreed to, or at least is willing to talk about, the 10-point plan, or saying 15 points, I think it's 10 points, that the Iranians have put forward. And many of those points were completely anathema to the United States before the beginning of the war. That is the shifting power dynamic that we've seen throughout the course of this conflict. And as we have been saying throughout, this war could only truly be considered a success if we know where the uranium is. And the Iranians don't seem to be terribly eager to reveal it. News headlines at 12:31 with Tim Humphrey.
The Mayor of London has told LBC that the Conservatives and Reform have performed the hokey-cokey over the UK's involvement with the military action in Iran.
One week they're in favour of unconditional support. One week they're asking questions of President Trump. It's not the way to lead our country.
Sir Sadiq Khan says the two parties haven't learned the lessons of the Iraq war and Sir Keir Starmer's approach has been the right one. The Foreign Secretary has thanked Pakistan and all those involved for their continued work on the negotiations that have led to a two-week ceasefire between the US, Israel and Iran. Yvette Cooper says Iran must cease all mining, drone attacks and other attempts to block commercial shipping in the strait immediately. Donald Trump says the US is talking tariffs and sanction relief with Iran. Oil prices have fallen sharply after the announcement of the ceasefire. A barrel of Brent crude, the benchmark for wholesale costs, has dropped to $94. It was $72 before the war started. LBC weather, some rain in the north and west. Otherwise, a fine afternoon with plenty of sunshine and feeling warm and a high of 26.
This is LBC.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Morrison to Lidl and saving £41 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/you save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh value of a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 26th of the 3rd, 26. Morrison does sell other products. See online for more details.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
weight loss.
Weight loss?
Forget that.
Keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
Time is 12:34. Ed in Swansea says, Lewis, please can we have more Trump impressions? I'm laughing so hard right now. Well, Ed, I'm pleased to say that I can oblige, because in the 2 minutes since I did the last one because of the last truth, I think we can definitely say that the President of the United States is up and about this morning, because he's truthed again and he said this: a country supplying military weapons to Iran will be immediately tariffed on any and all goods sold to the United States of America, 50% effective immediately. There will be no exclusions or exemptions. President DJT. So there we go. Threat now. Back to the old records. Back to the same old songs. We're back to tariffs, everybody. We're done with Iran war and potential nuclear obliteration of an entire civilization. And now we're back to our good old classic tracks of a few tariffs here and there. So any country supplying military weapons to Iran, which presumably include China and Russia, certainly supplying military components to Iran over the years, will be immediately tariffed. Which again, in terms of the zigzag of American foreign policy in the Trump administration, seems like a weird starting place, just as you're getting to the ceasefire, just as the 10 to 15 points, whatever they happen to be, Woodrow Wilson turning in his grave, getting to those points and trying to accommodate them for Trump to immediately come out and start talking about slapping tariffs on any country which he's supplying weapons to Iran. But the president, of course, works in mysterious ways. Paul is in Venice. Oh, and by the way, before we get to Paul, should be saying that LBC will be taking... we've got Pete Hegseth, Mr. Three Jacket Sizes Too Small, and with a brain which is even smaller to match, will be taking the Defence/War Secretary live from around 1 p.m. He's got something to say. So that's something to look forward to. Paul is in Inverness. Paul, your thoughts on where Keir Starmer and how he's played all of this?
Good morning, Lewis. Hope you're well.
Yes, well, thank you. Yes, what do you make of all of this? Well, peace has broken out, so we're all relieved.
Well, for starters, I'm still giggling at your description of Pete Hegseth there. That definitely got me going.
Well, yeah. I think that's the nicest thing I can say about him on the radio.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Well, I mean, the bottom line up front, for me, is I think Keir's played an absolute blinder. I don't think he will be necessarily appreciated for it in the next few years, but I think looking back in the next decade, we'll think he did. He played it absolutely perfectly. I'm going to play the role of James in his absence and bring up the Shilcock checklist.
I'm glad someone is.
Yeah. You're doing a decent job.
His ghost is with me at all times, like Banquo, don't worry.
But yeah, the Shilcock checklist. We spent £30 million assessing what went wrong in the second Gulf War going into Iraq. And I think if you break it down simply and look at it as that, why do we care? What's happening now? What might happen next? And so forth. I think there was no grounds that would justify us getting involved. I think his first initial stance where he was saying, no, I'm not going to get involved, and then he allowed things for defensive strikes. Personally, he was agile enough to evolve with the situation, but he wasn't getting too involved. And I agree that I think in the strongest realistic terms, he was condemning of Trump's moves.
Well, here's a question, Paul. Let me just put this to you. Slight counter-argument. Let's imagine that Donald Trump had tried to actually carry out his threats against Iran that he made only yesterday, that he was going to wipe out an entire civilization. Would Starmer, when it came down to it, would he have stopped the Americans from using our bases to have any involvement in that whatsoever? Would he?
That's a good question. Honestly, I don't know. I don't think he would. It depends what you mean. I mean, when Trump first came out, my mind thought, what on earth is he actually talking about using? Is he just talking about heavier strikes and starting to hit civilian infrastructure, which we can all agree is a war crime? I think this is where Keir's legal background comes in a lot. I think he would have... I definitely don't think he would have housed anything insane like nuclear weapons. I don't think he'd have allowed, you know, B-52s to refuel so that he could carry nuclear weapons over there, which I don't think Trump would have ever actually been able to use, even if he'd wanted to. I think... It's a difficult one. I would have liked... I'd like to think that if it was getting to the point where they were actually purposefully targeting civilian structures, that Keir would come out and say, right, that's it, you can't use Mildon Hall, you can't use Laken Heath for those operations.
Do you think that it will do him? And we can say, let's just take it as read for the moment, for the sake of argument, that he's performed well in the crisis, and that he's certainly, I think it's fair to say, he's basically been where the British public is at. We can see from all of the polling, British public did not want to get involved. Does it yield him any political benefit?
I don't think so. No? I think for the most part, anyone who was supporting him probably agrees with his actions. I don't think it's going to swing any swing voters. Domestically, I think he's not performing as well as you might hope. Foreign policy definitely is a strong point. So I don't think it'll actually affect anyone that's on the fence about him. I think if you support his actions, you'll still support him. And if you don't, then you won't. I think ultimately, I mean, it makes me glad looking back at the alternatives. You've got Kemi Badenoch, who was saying back in January that we would be right to support US strikes in Iran. Nigel Farage coming out in support. It makes me so glad that we've actually got an adult in the room for once.
All right, Paul in Inverness there. Let's turn to Louise in Billericay, who I think has a slightly different view. Louise, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Lewis. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Not bad at all. What do you have to say? How do you think Starmer has performed in this 40-day war?
Well, I've got something for you on that, but can I just say, at risk of turning this into a Lewis loving?
Oh no, we love that.
I want to echo the lady earlier who was talking about the short list on LBC of people we can listen to, and I just want to thank you for your incredulity, because I felt like some kind of Twilight Zone episode where almost everybody acted as if this was normal, and they're all catching up to you now, Lewis. So thank you for being at the vanguard of that.
Oh, well, that's nice. And look, I'm never against a loving. I can say that with absolute certainty. I mean, obviously, very rare, of course, for radio and television and podcast presenters to really, you know, really sort of eschew praise and adulation. We hate that sort of thing. Hate it. Don't want any of that. No. We're not in this business for that, are we? Anyway, Louise, before I get too ridiculous, go on. Tell me what you think about how Starmer's performed.
So, I have a particular viewpoint on this, Lewis, and I think it's fair to say that Starmer's handled this competently. And what we've got here is political and strategic, right? And I think politically he's handled this competently. But calling it his finest hour, I think, slightly misses what's actually going on. Mm. Because Britain isn't really acting as an independent player here. It's operating more like a lodger in America's geopolitical house.
Yes.
So our security strategy and positioning are so closely tied to the US that our choices are shaped within that framework. And that's really my bigger point here, and the bigger point. Countries don't act freely, Lewis, do they? They operate within systems of alliances, incentives, and dependencies. So whether it's Trump's behaviour, the conflict itself, or our response, they're all shaped by the same system rather than individual leaders acting independently. And I think part of this tension is Britain still sees itself as a global power. But in reality, we're operating as a mid-level player within this larger system. So I think Starmer's probably acted as well as the system allows, but that's very different from shaping the outcome to me.
I think that is exactly... I think, Louisa, I couldn't have put it better myself. I completely agree. I think that it is... given the kind of contours of the game that he found himself, and I don't use that term lightly, I just mean it as an expression, that I think Starmer probably navigated it as well as he could. But let's be honest. You know, Britain and Europe, strategically speaking, this is just the latest, it's not the only one, the latest of a series of crises which basically show how strategically impotent not just Britain, but Europe has become in terms of these big, great power competitions and great power games. And, you know, we've chosen to stay on the sidelines, I think rightly, but let's be honest, if we'd wanted to get involved, if we'd wanted to get stuck in, what would we have done? What aid would we conceivably have given? And say it took a week or so for the Dragon to get there. You know, we sent some military support limited to Cyprus and so on. But, you know, realistically speaking, even if we had wanted to get involved in trying to open up the straits, we couldn't have done so.
No, exactly. And I think that it's like there's a parallel conversation going on. There's the conversation of people who think of us still as the empire. And then there's the people who are trying to put their hand up and say, actually, this is the reality. And I think the, you know, this sort of jingoistic thing about, you know, Britain should get in. And by the way, just picking up what you said earlier about this being the Tories' navy, it absolutely is. And I think they should sit down and shut up for a very long time. And I want to thank you for the times you push back when they come on and act as if those 14 years haven't happened, because it's like it's kind of disappeared. And this is what we're dealing with, Lewis.
Well, I think it's perfectly legitimate for the Tories or anybody else to question, to scrutinise, that is their job, the military preparedness and the decisions taken in the weeks leading up to the war, what the MOD was doing and the decisions the MOD were making. Perfectly fair enough. That's a tactical thing. But there's a bigger strategic thing that the Tories are absolutely up to their neck in, which is, of course, that, as I say, the military capabilities that we now have, that is the Tories' capabilities. Because, you know, Labour may be in government, but this is a bequest. The military we have is a bequest from the Conservatives, because you just can't possibly build up, and not that this government is doing so especially, but you can't possibly augment and build up, you know, a huge navy, new navy, out of nowhere.
No, and if we did a war bond today and raised billions, it's still going to be 10 to 20 years before we make up for the damage and derogation of the last 15 years.
Indeed.
And prior to that...
Go on, just finish the point.
I think the thing to me, Lewis, is that, and I don't know why more people don't talk about this, it's all about the systems, right? Yesterday I was desperate to get on when you were talking about the system in America. My final point I want to say is we build systems that assume the best of human behaviour, right? They don't cater for the worst. And what we're seeing now with what Trump's doing in America, what he's doing in Iran, how we are trapped as Trump's lodger with a rogue landlord, it's all because we now have somebody who doesn't respect the systems.
Indeed. Louise in Billericay, grateful to you. Donald Trump, he's busy this morning. ABC reporting, I don't know if he's told ABC this, but ABC are reporting it anyway, that Trump has said that there may be a joint US-Iran venture for Hormuz tolls. It is all just one massive grift. 12:46.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
A ceasefire. Did America win it with bombs and bombast? Or does a pounded Iran now have world economies in a headlock with the Strait of Hormuz? And will it hold?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Oh, Fiona's back at the monkey safari again. She's hooked on Toyota Service and Aftercare. In fact, it's so good, she'll find any excuse to come back. From replacement wipers to service and MOTs, our perks include free refreshments, quiet workspaces, courtesy cars, and a new warranty with every eligible service. Toyota Service and Aftercare. So good, you'll find any excuse to come back. Eligible services are available until the vehicle turns 10 years old or 100,000 miles. T's and C's apply.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12:49. As I was saying there, Donald Trump, very, very active morning in Washington. He's obviously got up with things to say. Kel Surprise. He's actually been speaking to the ABC News Chief Washington Correspondent, Jonathan Carl, who has tweeted, "This morning I asked President Trump if he's okay with the Iranians charging a toll for all the ships to go through the Strait of Hormuz. He told me that there may be a joint US-Iran venture to charge tolls." Donald Trump saying, "We're thinking of doing it as a joint venture. It's a way of securing it, also securing it from lots of other people. It's a beautiful thing." Ben Judah is the former advisor to David Lammy as Foreign Secretary, who worked closely on the first Israel-US airstrikes last year, also known, of course, as the 12-day war. Ben, obviously, this is a fluid situation. Now the president is talking about going into business with the Iranian government, a government that, like the rest of Iran, he was threatening to erase from the face of the earth only yesterday, wipe out from the face of the earth. But as things stand right now, who won and who lost in this war?
I think that the main thing that we have to face up to right now is that the President of the United States is supremely and unnervingly erratic. And what we've seen over the last 48 hours on the lines that in black Sharpie ink that he's known to favour for his signatures. This is really quite a concerning moment.
You think that he is acting more erratically, more quixotically than we've seen in the past, even compared to the last 12 months?
That's correct. I think that in the last 2 months, I think that Donald Trump's behaviour has become more erratic, more unnerving and more disturbing for allies such as the UK, France or Germany. And the way that he has conducted this war and the way that he has conducted the last 48 hours, I think is really quite concerning.
What do you attribute that to?
I don't have any kind of insight into Trump's mental state, but I think that we have a political situation around Trump where aides and advisers and members of his cabinet are frightened of him and know that their political position depends entirely on sort of being obsequious and doffing their cap to him and are unable to really say no. So whatever idea floats into his head or whatever idea is pitched to him that he takes a shine to often tends to dominate, even if it doesn't add up and it becomes very incoherent.
Ben, are you shocked, as I am, by the number of people, often very intelligent people and analysts of foreign policy and so on, political players and commentators in the UK, who continue, despite, as far as I can see, all logic and experience and recent history, to superimpose and attribute to Trump logic and reason and strategy and gameplay, which, frankly, we can just see for our own eyes, just does not exist?
I think that there are two reasons for that. I think that there's one honest reason for that, which is Trump, you know, 1.0 in his first administration was a lot more rational and logical and traditional now looking back on it. And there were several moments in that in which looked a lot more chaotic than maybe it actually was. Mm. And then there's a second, I think, slightly more dishonest reason for that, which is I think a lot of analysts who support the war or who support the Conservative Party or the Reform Party, which at various moments have supported the war, I think are keen to make it seem a far more conventional endeavour than it actually is. And they don't want to own up to the fact that it's an extremely capricious and unnerving act.
They've put too much of their own sort of political currency behind the idea that actually, oh, actually, it's just the Libs getting wound up and they've got Trump derangement syndrome and actually he's far more rational than he appears and look at what he does, not just what he says and all that sort of stuff. They've just sort of put too much currency behind all those ideas to retreat from.
I think that they absolutely have. And I think it's a mixture of a sort of honest looking back at how Trump 1.0 was and seeing that maybe there was a bit more order and strategy there than first met the eye. And then I think it's a dishonest attempt to keep on justifying a lot of movements or politicians that have tied themselves to the Trump wagon.
Where do you think this leaves British foreign policy now? Has this changed our, or should it change our disposition and attitudes by comparison to where we were even 40 days ago when the war started?
There is only one way to go, which is closer to our allies in the European Union. And we've had a lot of strong positive noises on that from the Chancellor and from the Prime Minister. But I think that they need to make a much larger effort to explain to the British public that the so-called special relationship doesn't really exist anymore and that our security and our economic future lies with Europe.
Do you think that they ought to be that explicit? Do you think that the Prime Minister or the Foreign Secretary or whoever ought to actually put it in quite bald terms that the special relationship is not what it was?
I think they should, and the reason is that they have been under almost daily political attack from Donald Trump during this conflict. And I think that a stronger explanation to the British people of what's happening and where we need to go, I think, would benefit the Labour Party politically.
Is NATO, at least for the remainder of the Trump presidency, can we seriously consider it to be a going concern?
I think that NATO is clearly undermined, but so far the United States appears to enjoy having NATO there as a source of leverage. I think that we need to be concerned, however, that Trump's attention will drift back to Europe, to Ukraine, and to a potential deal with Vladimir Putin after whatever wraps up in the Middle East wraps up. I'm not saying that's going to be in 2 weeks. It could be in a few months, but his attention will return to this continent, which is why the government needs to make a stronger explanation and get on with getting closer back to Europe.
And the just finally, the Prime Minister is in the Gulf today. He's been criticised for that. There are some who say, well, what exactly is he doing there? I mean, he was a sort of bit player spectator to this entire affair and this entire enterprise. Seems a bit curious that just as it wraps up, at least for this stage, that he should pop up there.
So the UK has long-standing, historic, very profitable, very close people-to-people financial relationships with the key Gulf Emirates, in particular with Qatar and the UAE, and of course with Saudi Arabia. The UAE in particular, and Qatar in particular, feel that the UK hasn't stood by them as a strong enough ally, and that the UK should have moved more resources to the region faster and taken a tougher line, either in pushing the United States to a ceasefire, that's the Qatari view, or in taking greater action to defend them. That's the UAE view. And the Prime Minister thinks that it's in the UK economic and geostrategic interest to get out there and try and get those relationships back on a stronger footing.
Ben Judah there, former advisor to David Lammy when he was Foreign Secretary. Steve is in Penn in Buckinghamshire rather than Penn State. Steve, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Great to be on your programme. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Your thoughts on how Starmer's played this crisis?
I think he's played it as good as he possibly could do, given the cards he's got. We're certainly no world power now. I really don't know what we could do. We've got no army or navy. The navy we got is just like it's been said before, it's the Conservative Navy. It's hollowed out, as their defence minister once said. And, you know, it's And the guys, I've got to say this, it sounds like I'm knocking them, I'm not, but the guys in the Navy are probably doing their damnedest with the equipment they've got, you know what I mean?
Yes, but do you think in terms of, you could say, if you're being a bit harsher, you could say, well, what Starmer's done, he's been inert.
Well, you could do, couldn't you? But I don't think that'd be very, very fair at all. I mean, we can't go to war with Donald Trump. He's a complete madman, isn't he?
Well, I think that's clear. Steve, I just want to get Kenny from Liverpool in before we hand over to Sheila Fogarty. Also, of course, we're waiting to see Pete Hegseth, the War Secretary, Defence Secretary, is waiting to speak, so we'll cross live to that if it happens. Kenny is in Liverpool. Kenny, last word to you.
Hiya, Lewis. Yeah, what haunted me about this war, and I'm absolutely made up with Keir Starmer not taking this country into the war, a couple of weeks ago, I saw on the television that a Tomahawk missile had blown the school up in Iran. And immediately Donald Trump was on the television saying it was a Tomahawk missile of the Iranians and it's got nothing to do with us. And then when they found out the evidence that they'd killed these children, he's still making he's going to have an investigation. But what that really got to me, Lewis, is there was only one little snippet, and it still haunts me today, where these children are walking through the corridor, and at the end of this film, it was said that all these children on this film are now dead. And yeah. I've made up that Keir Starmer didn't put this country, because I don't know how this man sleeps at night. He's completely different than anything that I've ever been brought up with. You know, he doesn't think about anything.
I've got a feeling, Kenny, got to cut you off there. I've got a feeling that Donald Trump sleeps entirely soundly. If you missed any of today's show, because we are out of time, you can come back on our free Global Player app, LBC app. You can also stay up to date there with all the latest news, videos and opinion. You can listen, of course, to a range of podcasts, including Lewis Goodall in for James O'Brien on lewisgoodall.com/JamesO'BrienDaily. The best bits from the LBC show every day. You can download the official LBC app for free from your app store. Now I will be back tomorrow, who knows, with some more Trump impressions, if popular demand allows. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for the machine, and it's Sheila Fogarty. Sheila, great to see you.
I'll have to work on my Caroline Levitt at this rate. Thank you very much indeed. as you said just a moment ago, Lewis, Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, is going to speak shortly. He will, of course, say it's a win for the US, but is it? Here's one take from a former US national security official. The cost of this deal, 13 American lives, thousands of Iranian lives, Israeli and Gulf state deaths as well, oil price mayhem, allies looking askance, to say the very least, at the US, open threats of genocide from an American president, all to open the Strait of Hormuz, which was, you guessed it, open before the war even began. Who won and what did they win? And has the world won yet in what J.D. Vance is calling, accurately I think, a very fragile peace?
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The Prime Minister is on his way to the Middle East after the US and Iran agreed on a 2-week ceasefire. Sir Starmer will hold talks with Gulf leaders about how they can support the truce. London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan has defended the Prime Minister over the UK's involvement in the conflict, telling LBC Sir Keir has consulted with colleagues and allies and contrasted his approach with that of Donald Trump.
For many people, Persia, Iran is the cradle of civilization, and I'm unclear why he seeks to, on a daily basis, gratuitously seek to cause offence to the followers of the religion of Islam. It's unnecessary.
But former Conservative Foreign Secretary James Cleverly told LBC the Prime Minister has been slow to act.
This attempt to retrofit some kind of credibility by rushing off to the Gulf after a ceasefire has been announced is far, far too little, far too late.
The UK's average price of diesel has surpassed 190 pence a litre, having surged by more than a third since the start of the Iran war. But the cost of a barrel of Brent crude has dropped to $94 following the announcement of a ceasefire. President Trump has posted to say the United States will work closely with Iran, which we have determined has gone through what will be a very productive regime change. He says there will be no enrichment of uranium, and he's threatened tariffs on any country that gives Iran weapons. US Defence Secretary Pete Hegseth is due to speak shortly. Meanwhile, the Israeli military claims it's hit Lebanon with what it's called its largest coordinated strike since the conflict in the Middle East began. It says 100 military sites and command centres belonging to Hezbollah have been targeted. An investigation into the BBC's coverage of this year's BAFTA Film Awards has found the broadcast of a racial slur was a clear breach of their editorial standards. The Executive Complaints Unit agreed it was a genuine mistake, given that the same word was edited out by the team later in the programme. It also found the decision to edit director Akinola Davis Jr.'s speech was purely down to time constraints. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 309 points at 10,660. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, some rain in the north and west, otherwise a fine afternoon with plenty of sunshine and feeling warm, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. It won't surprise you to know we're going to focus throughout the afternoon on the war in Iran and that peace deal. Pete Hegseth, the US Secretary of Defense, is speaking now. Let's go live to it.
And the free world for 47 years. Chance of death to America, targeting our people, killing Americans, lying and blackmailing their way toward a nuclear weapon, so they thought. No longer. Not on our watch. Other presidents marked time and kicked the can down the road. President Trump made history. From the strike that took out Qasem Soleimani, to tearing up the disastrous Obama-Iran deal, to the precision campaign that obliterated Iran's nuclear sites in Operation Midnight Hammer, to the decisive military victory we just achieved in Operation Epic Fury. No other president has shown the courage and resolve of this commander-in-chief. President Trump forged this moment. Iran begged for this ceasefire, and we all know it. As the president truthed this morning, a big day for world peace. Iran wants it to happen. They've had enough. Operation Epic Fury was a historic and overwhelming victory on the battlefield. A capital V military victory. By any measure, Epic Fury decimated Iran's military and rendered it combat ineffective for years to come. You see, in less than 40 days, one of our combatant commands, Central Command, CENTCOM, using less than 10% of America's total combat power, dismantled one of the world's largest militaries. The world's leading state sponsor of terrorism proved utterly incapable of defending itself, its people, or its territory. We untied just a fraction of our strength, and Iran suffered a devastating military defeat. Together with our Israeli partners, America's military achieved every single objective on plan, on schedule, exactly as laid out from day one. Iran's Navy is at the bottom of the sea, whether it's the Soleimani class, their frigate class, their prized drone aircraft carriers, submarines, mine layers, sunk. Iran's Air Force has been wiped out. Iran no longer has an air defense, any sort of a comprehensive air defense system. We own their skies. Their missile program is functionally destroyed. Launchers, production facilities, and existing stockpiles depleted and decimated. And almost completely ineffective. Iran shot hundreds and hundreds of missiles and one-way attack drones at our aircraft carrier. They were obsessed with it, and they never got even close. Every single one of those shots easily shot down miles and miles away from the Abe Lincoln. They were blowing ammo into fantasy land. Contrast that with, most significantly, in last night's wave of more than 800 strikes, we finished completely destroying Iran's defense industrial base, a core pillar of our mission objective. What little they have left buried in bunkers is all they will have. They can still shoot, we know that. Their command and control is so decimated they can't really talk and coordinate, so they still may shoot here and there, but that would be very, very unwise. But they can no longer build missiles, build rockets, build launchers, or build UAVs. Their factories have been razed to the ground, set back in historic fashion. You see, had Iran refused our terms, the next targets would have been their power plants, their bridges, and oil and energy infrastructure. Targets they could not defend and could not realistically rebuild. It would have taken them decades, and we were locked and loaded. They couldn't defend against it. President Trump had the power to cripple Iran's entire economy in minutes, but he chose mercy. He spared those targets because Iran accepted the ceasefire under overwhelming pressure. The new Iranian regime understood that a deal was far better than the fate that awaited them. This new regime just happened to look at what happened to their predecessors. Their top leadership was systematically eliminated. Their previous Iranian supreme leader, dead. The Supreme National Security Council secretary, dead. The Supreme Leader Office Advisor, dead. The Supreme Leader Military Office Chief, dead. The Defense Minister, no longer with us. The IRGC Commander,